Hello and welcome back to We Heart Hartnett, the podcast dedicated to exploring the filmography of Josh Hartnett, movie by movie. I'm Patrick Willems.
I'm Jacob Torpy.
Hey folks, it's me, Matt Torpy.
Can I just say that I look forward to our introductions each time because I, like, however I intone my name usually dictates the choice Jake will make to intone his name. And then you
it's
usually
a very short butterfly effect.
Yeah.
Right. And then, like, if you use a middle initial or whatever, then that will dictate the choice that Matt will make. And so, yeah, it's
that's interesting.
It's always fun.
It's a little lesson in causality. And the interconnectedness of all things.
You know who can tell you more about the about causality?
The lovers.
The Merovingian. This is a podcast about the Merovingian, everyone's favorite character from the Matrix sequels.
I love the Merovingian.
Wait,
dude.
Who's the Merovingian in the Matrix sequels?
He's the French guy.
He's the guy.
Of course he is.
The husband of Monica Bellucci.
Yeah, the guy who hires the albino twins.
What?
See, he bleeds. He's just
a man.
Why does he... Who is the Merovingian?
Jake, is
Do you not remember the French guy in the Matrix?
No, I remember,
the French guy with the chateau and they do the battle in the chateau.
Yeah, and he drinks the wine.
And he
and
gives
the
woman...
Chateau plays by Rob Dugan.
Great song. And he gives the woman the cake that gives her an orgasm. And then he used that as an example for his monologue about causality.
Right, and he loves causality.
I actually forgot about the orgasm cake.
And it goes into Matrix
code. I'll
have
what she's having.
Remember, the movie goes into Matrix code and then goes down to her crotch as you see then this effect
there.
Oh, this
bloom of...
of
orange ones and zeros instead of the usual green ones.
Yes, that's literally what happens.
Yeah. That's how you learn that it's all just math, folks. All right?
But
the
the
female pussy? Math.
All I see is blonde, brunette, redhead.
That's all I see in the Matrix.
It's all math.
Guys, let's do a Matrix podcast. I could talk about that.
Yeah,
for
you
a long
want
time.
That secretly, so we're not going to.
Yeah, but
selling tricks. No,
we could just do a Merovingian podcast, considering how beloved that character is.
Yeah, you'll all recall.
Actually, do you know that originally
Jake is not a stand-in for the average listener?
Well, I'm not.
What will actually come as no surprise is that they offered that role to, maybe he was even signed on, to Vincent Cassel.
He would have been great. I thought the guy was Vincent Cassel.
Well, because Vincent Cassel's at the time real-life wife, Monica Bellucci, plays the Merovingian's wife, and the guy they got resembles Vincent Cassel.
It's weird. What happened there?
I kind of reverse engineered him to be Christoph Waltz.
Oh.
Can you imagine if Christoph Waltz had an appearance in The Matrix and that was secretly his thing? Because he was just in German language films.
Well, just imagine him doing the, like all the Merovingian's lines. Because he's like the most colorful of the new characters in the sequels. Because
he'd be like, cake and he's like, don't forget the crayon.
Headless.
He's like,
you'll headless.
That's a bingo.
Yeah.
So
Christoph Waltz has a hard to do voice.
What we're saying
is
he's
like eight accents just smashed into a super collider of accents.
Yeah, and he speaks all the languages.
12 languages.
He's fluent and then
which is
accentless,
all of them.
Probably. I'm assuming. Tell me if I'm wrong. Or he carries that strange American English for inflection to his other languages when he speaks them, if anyone's a fluent. is affluent in Italian is where I was going with that as me.
French. I'm currently reading the Merovingian's entry on the Matrix wiki.
Is a Merovingian something though? Like I don't know.
That word
that
for
sounds
sure
like,
wasn't something the Wachowskis
yes,
just pulled out
yes.
of their butts.
Merovingian, the definition is relating to the Frankish dynasty founded by Clovis and reigning in Gaul and Germany. In the years 500 to 750 AD. There's a whole article about the Merovingian dynasty.
That is an evil last name. I mean, that's that last name just phonetically.
Well, it sounds like an evil
Vince
Clortho. It just sounds like one of those people.
Yeah.
Keymaster of Gozer?
Keymaster of Gozer. Yeah. With the the Wachowski siblings don't...
They're just sisters now.
The Wachowski sisters don't go halfway when they create their mythology behind their movies.
No, they do not.
As dumb as it may sometimes
as
seem.
As Jupiter Ascending taught us.
The level of...
Give the wolf boy the booster
height
boots.
Of the fence they're swinging towards is so high, always, which I really appreciate, even if that movie is laughing
silly
stock.
As fuck.
Yeah, I, like...
I also love that Sean Bean controls bees. That always just made me laugh. It's just like, I'm Sean Bean. There's bees everywhere.
Well, bees can sense royalty, obviously.
Yeah,
we all know that.
Everyone knows you got to eat the royal jelly and you become the queen.
Yeah.
Anyone and can do it.
I will say, like, the news came out today that the Wachowskis are selling their office space where they've had their like production company, and apparently have no projects in development. And there's also rumors that there is that Lana and Lily aren't getting along, and things are like rough between them.
Oh,
and
really?
I'm so bummed out about it. I want, even though they haven't really had a hit in years, I want the Wachowskis to just be given like $100 million every few years to do whatever they want. Because
I would love some Jupiter Ascending lore background stuff. The way, you know, like, you know what? I'd love them to take a stab at the sort of Riddick series.
Wait, bring Riddick back?
Yeah. Vin Diesel.
Guys,
all
there's
up
a Riddick
on that.
Trilogy.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
Make it a
pitch dark.
Make it a
Chronicles of Riddick.
Pitch black.
And then Riddick.
Make a decalogue of Riddick movies.
The Riddick decalogue.
The Riddick
imagine
decalogue.
That boxed set.
Ridiculogue.
Well, look,
it would be really cool.
Honestly, nothing would make Vin Diesel happier.
It would be ridiculous.
Okay.
This shit is fucking ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
Wait, that could be the song on the soundtrack.
Oh,
of course.
Man. Oh yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
One hand in the air.
That'd you know what
cool.
I was thinking?
I also want to make more Riddick references, but I can't.
There's, yeah,
guys,
what else
someone,
can we do?
I saw the Chronicles
you
of Riddick
in, the dark.
In theaters, and I remember that Judi Dench is in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Dame Judi Dench.
Dame
Judi
Dench.
Judi Dench.
Judi Dench is. That's almost as funny as Bradley Booper.
Bradley Booper,
which is my new favorite Bradley Cooper stand in.
Guys, I remember how the Chronicles of Riddick ends.
Or what was the thing the cereal mascot?
Oh, when we flipped the letters to cereals, my personal favorite
coming.
One was Chount Cocula.
Yeah, I'm a chount on that Cocula.
This is a podcast about Josh Hartnett.
I'm going to Drax that. Sklansons.
Key and Peele. Keep making comedy.
Key and Peele.
Oh, boy.
We've seen this, right, folks?
Drax that Sklansed?
You know what I was talking, I was texting with a friend of mine, and we were talking about how we hate the phrase bound to be a cult hit, or like when the like, it's like reviewers are in. An instant cult classic. Like, they just suddenly presume.
You can't say what society is going to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were saying it's the same. It's like guaranteed to beat the odds. Just like some insane, like, I don't know. Every time I hear it, I just want to be like, shut the fuck up. Let it happen.
Yeah. Like, almost by saying it, you're going to jinx it. And even if it was going to become
course.
A cult classic, suddenly you said
it's
it.
It's just
and
a shame to see, like,
mojo.
Yeah. Like, again, to see marketing hone in on. A
trends
concept,
that should happen organically.
And then just devour it from the inside out and make everyone mistrust it.
Also, if the movie's brand new, maybe it'll just be a hit. Maybe it'll be a full-on classic, not a cult classic.
Yeah.
I feel like for cult classics, you need to have the
it needs
hindsight
to be ignored
of time.
Upon release.
Yeah.
No, of course.
You need
that's
to have
the
like at least 5 or 6 years behind it, and then all of a sudden people are buzzing about it.
Right. But so, guys, I'm going to do a hard pivot into something else that I want to talk about, which is not the topic of this week's episode. This is an episode
what's
where
going on, man?
We're discussing the film Oh, Lucy. But what I want to talk about is one of our listeners made a bingo board / drinking game for our podcast and sent it to us today on Twitter. This is by her Twitter handle is at Lee Fenn.
Has she listened to everything?
No, she's only up to Sin City.
Oh, man, you got to get in the jungle.
But it's so accurate. It's so accurate.
All right.
Have you seen this?
No, read it.
Oh, man. Got to be all over that Twitter.
How can you make a bingo game based on what we're saying if you haven't even heard I Come With the Rain episode?
Oh my God.
I mean, we establish a lot of funny continuing jokes.
I remember that episode so clearly and all the things that we said.
We weren't tired when we recorded that.
We hadn't just watched that movie. Actually, that might have been the most tired I ever was. Either that or the Sin City episode.
Ever?
No, while recording.
Oh. It'd be funny if that was the most tired you'd ever been in your entire life and you remembered it. Whoops.
Yeah, it was weird that it was then. It wasn't like one of those times that I fell asleep. But no,
would you say the most tired you could be is when you're asleep? That's an interesting thought experiment.
Okay, Matt, since you have not seen this, do you want to hear the...
lay it on me.
The tropes of our podcast.
What are they?
That people could form a drinking game about? Okay. Sirens in the background.
Yeah.
That's pretty good already, and that definitely continues to happen.
Patrick reminding the brothers not to hit the table.
Okay, I've been real good about that lately.
Yeah.
You have. Yeah. Way to go, Matt.
My hands are... nowhere near the table.
This is one that doesn't come up very much anymore.
Except this one.
But it came up a lot early on. She's All That reference.
Yes.
That's faded away.
Tapers off.
That does taper off.
kind of like, actually, this next one still crops up every now and again. Hateful Chris Klein remark.
Yeah, we were just ragging on Chris Klein, I think, in The Ottoman Lieutenant a little bit.
Yeah. I have a Chris Klein update that I want to. I'll save for a few minutes from now. Don't let me forget.
Is he sick?
Next one. Next
is he
one.
Dying.
Next one. Of course, still comes up every now and again. Halloween water.
Oh yeah. Hell yeah! Yeah, dude. Yeah.
You know what? Halloween water. You drink again now.
Yeah.
And okay, next one.
Go see the latest installment in the water series.
Yeah.
You mean Halloween H4O? Yeah. It's 40 years. Next one.
Is that some new element?
Well, there's a Simpsons episode where Dr. Nick creates H3O, the wettest water you've ever tasted.
Fuck.
Funny. Next one, Jake gets fired by Patrick.
I haven't been fired recently.
Yeah, I actually praised you for the pun that you used earlier.
Yeah, I've actually been getting promotions.
Listen, so we were at a rocky startup phase where it wasn't clear what everyone's roles were. We were kind of like stepping on each other's toes. It was too many cooks in the kitchen. And things have smoothed out.
I'm the god of the podcast. You are my disciples.
Okay. And we praise you every day. You are the...
I control the audio levels. Mm-hmm. I can mute you with a flick of my finger.
That is the same as snuffing out the guttering fire of my life force.
Because what is
form.
Your life outside of this podcast? Nothing. This gives you purpose. Okay, next item.
Yes,
still comes up relatively often. Town and Country Universe.
Yeah.
Hell yes.
Next one still comes up frequently. Jake and Matt making an inside joke that Patrick doesn't laugh at. And the next one still comes up a lot.
What?
Reference to Josh's dark, mysterious eyes.
He does have them, so it's like...
So what do you want? What do you want from
us? Are we going to not talk about them? They're right there staring us in the face.
A little attacked. I mean, he has dark, mysterious eyes. What, am I going to not say it?
It'd be cool if he did... you know what Josh hasn't done?
He has them again.
Opened
in
his
this
eyes?
Film.
He's never opened his eyes in a movie. Fact. He is Brock from Pokemon. No, Josh has never done a role where he's had to wear face putty yet, or like really change his face.
He hasn't done
up.
Prosthetics.
Yeah, he hasn't done any prosthetics.
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting.
Oh,
so his eyes are always dark and
also,
mysterious.
Also, someone replied to that and said, with other items to list, which are requests for Josh to appear on the podcast.
Oh, well, you drink at least once a sode.
Yeah. Also, by the way, now that that's been brought up, Josh Hartnett, if you're listening, please come on the show.
Please, we
have one movie left in your filmography. We are, look, you'll never meet fans like us who care as much as us, who have devoted as much time and effort and thought to your work. Come talk to us.
I mean, this is almost a performance art piece in itself.
Exactly. You owe us. The other items...
Oh, and by the way, everyone take a drink.
Of what?
Take a cold glass of... Hey, you know what's coming up? Halloween. What are you drinking, Matt? Water?
Water.
Interesting.
Hey, sure.
Wait. The other items this guy lists are someone attempts an accent. Also, pretty often.
Yeah,
that's more frequent, I think, than...
Yeah, Patrick mentions they're half an hour into an episode and haven't started discussing the movie.
Oh, yeah. That's every episode.
That's
another one you're guaranteed a drink.
Hey, we're only 14 minutes into this episode.
You're guaranteed
so far.
A drink. Let me say something. If you're using that criteria, you're guaranteed a drink.
It's almost like you're begging for a drink.
You're begging for a drink.
You're going to get fucked
Tip
up.
Tip your head back.
Because you're drinking.
And so, take a big swig.
I think...
And it better also...
Nice accent also.
Fuck.
Drink it.
And the you're only the drinking game, you have to drink grain alcohol, It has
Everclear,
to be
has to
200%. Yeah, you have to drink a searing full shot of Everclear. And no, we don't accept any responsibility for what might happen to
wait,
you.
Wait, do you mean, is that a way of saying just listen to an album by the band Everclear?
Oh, yeah.
A full swig of Everclear.
I don't
know.
Can
ears.
You now, but okay, so now that the other thing is sing a song. Did we, right? Did, what's an Everclear song again?
Okay.
Ooh,
wait.
Know.
Oh, okay. They're one of those bands that I mix up with.
Yeah.
But
I mix them up with like Incubus for no reason because I know it's probably not at all the same.
Oh, yeah, I honestly, I don't think I have any idea.
Father of mine. You know, father of, come on.
No,
maybe.
Come on.
Sorry, man.
That was it. I'm going to bring this up and...
All right, we're going to hear an Everclear.
If you could sing a damn note for your life.
Also, if I knew more than three words.
Father of mine.
Dude
about me.
Oh. I need to hear some sort of... This sucks.
Yeah.
No, give it a chance.
Hold on, Leo. Let's get it. When do we owe royalties?
Fuck yeah, look at that drum beat.
Wow, this is...
Do you remember this now?
No.
Yeah, but not really.
I don't
It's like
remember
definitely
this.
Of an era, like the sound, but...
It's so generic
too
sounding.
Generic, yeah.
You mean from the year 1998?
This is a little cooler. And you drink Everclear to this. That's what I actually meant.
Every time we do one of your bingo things, you have to listen to this song and drink Everclear.
That song's okay. Very boring.
So that was the song Father of Mine played...
Everclear, come on the pod.
Played through laptop speakers into the microphone. Probably maybe the most unlistenable thing to appear on this podcast
That's
ever.
That's not true. I have burp and fart.
Matt burp and fart
no,
make poopy.
I
make poopy. My,
we have a hole in his seat so he can make poopy, but it doesn't get on seat.
Have we lost all our listeners by
no,
now?
No, we have not. In fact, that's a cool. That's funny, and people love it, and there's more of them.
I will say Matt's farts have never audibly made it into an episode.
Not from lack of
as
trying.
Far as we know.
I
go remain, back and listen to the whole
show.
We're going to have a full...
also, adjust...
Find the fart. The box set of our podcast.
And you have to be
Roger
like...
Roger Daltrey's like selling it on late night TV.
You have to be like Gene Hackman in The Conversation and like adjust... Or more like John Travolta in Blowout and like adjust all like the frequencies.
Literally Blowout of my butt.
This is the episode
that
about
Lucy. That is a roundabout way of describing a fart.
Hell
it's a
yeah,
butt
dude.
Blowout.
And that guys, was, this whole show is scripted, by the way, so Pat definitely teed me up really well there. We do some tight writing on this show.
Why?
What were we talking about?
Wait,
oh, more of the bingo items.
Wait, and there were...
Bingo.
There were two points that I said that I wanted to say, and then I said, guys, don't let me forget to say that these things.
We also forgot to
What
not
was the thing
forget.
That I was going to say?
How long ago did you say... That you had a
like,
thing you
like 4 minutes ago.
4 minutes ago.
Okay. Well, that helps. Oh, okay.
We were talking about the notes and or like the drinking game.
Guys, call in if you.
This is so embarrassing now. Maybe I should just cut out the part where I say, guys, don't let me forget to say this
no.
because I've forgotten.
Maybe you'll remember as we're talking though.
Yeah.
Maybe it was something pertaining to.
This is
podcast.
How the sausage you love to eat gets made.
Oh my God, we're.
We'll keep
bad
going through the bingo items.
At doing this. Well, I did. That
oh,
was
that
all
was
of
all
them.
Of them. I also added, because I think we do this one pretty frequently, that we like to say the word milk. Muke. We like to say have a glass of muke.
A glass of muke. That's just for us.
It is. It's just
but
it's
I hope
a really
you like
cute
it.
Way of saying that word. And I recommend if you've never said that word aloud in that particular way to try it.
Yeah.
It feels good.
Just do it like
it feels nice and soft.
At first, just do it alone in your house. Take a sip of milk and then just make sure you're like milk.
Fuck! What was the thing that I wanted to say?
Take a sip of milk.
Pat's like going crazy.
If you share an apartment, if you have any roommates, be a good roommate and form a dry bowl of cereal. In the morning, and put the bowl down and be like,
and then stand near him
and just see if they're like missing something and be like.
Do you need anything from the kitchen?
Okay, so
I didn't want cereal.
My nightmare is playing out right now, where I'm trying to remember this valid point I wanted to make,
and while you're hearing a podcast, if it was just me and Jake, that
exactly,
had no structure.
I'm sitting here silently, like trying to remember something. While you two are just free to just spin, to just do
you
the stuff,
the sick, twisted places we go when we are free. We're running free and we're naked and we're covered in shit. We're covered in shit. We're talking about muke.
I'm here like, no, Patrick, think of it. Think of it. You can't let them keep doing this for too much longer. They're out of control. Rein them in.
So we're talking about Lucy, folks. And you know what? A blessed oasis in this desert of content that Josh has been in
recently.
We're
talking about Lucy.
It's so good.
It's so we... This movie with its 100% score on Rotten Tomatoes. We've
That's
been
right.
looking it's
fresh.
Weird, like we've been for a small sensitive Japanese film. Mm-hmm. We have been hyping the shit out of this cuz it's just like it's been just in the distance. We're just like we're wading through a sea of okay, saying a sea of shit is a bit mean to Josh.
Boobs. No, that's nice.
I was
trying to do a callback.
Well, a sea of weird CGI boobs is kind of disturbing.
Yeah.
Well, what's funny
and maybe
in
they're
retrospect,
squirting muke out of their nipple.
Muke. What's funny though is that honestly, now in retrospect, Josh flying through a sea of CGI Cronenberg boobs is actually a highlight.
Cronen boobs.
Cronen boobs. Duvid Cronen boobs is actually kind of a highlight though, because now we've seen the lovers and we've seen the Ottoman lieutenant.
Yeah, you don't,
like,
you don't know what you have till you lose it. You know?
I would kill for a 40 days and 40 nights now.
Kill for Cronen boobs.
But yeah, we've made it through the sea and we've arrived at the promised land that we've been talking about for so long.
Which is a short debut feature film.
Debut feature
Yeah, that's what's funny. It seems like
it's really good.
This seems like the kind of thing that we've been hyping up like, oh my God, it's going to be like so exciting. It's going to be it seems like it's going to be a big deal. And it's like, oh, it's a nice, small, sensitive little film about like a middle-aged Japanese woman.
It's not, mm-hmm. it's not sensitive in the sense that like it has empathy for its characters,
right.
like every single one of them, but like not sensitive or pleasant in the sense that it has soft edges.
Right,
it's pretty fucking bleak, and the like
oh yeah
the moments of respite from their horrible lives that the various characters get is small
and very
comparison.
Temporary.
Right, I'm just saying it seems like it would be one thing if we were. Like if Black Hawk Down fell here, we're like getting hyped to be like, oh my God, we're gonna watch this big like Ridley Scott war movie, and it's like, oh fuck yeah, oh Lucy,
you're
the
right.
small understated indie film,
a small character piece.
But it's just you know we it's been a while since we've watched a movie
since I watched a movie
and way to steal a great bit.
Yeah,
that's a bit that was. Made up, not by me.
Just saying it's been a while and saying that it's been a while.
It's a Scott Aukerman thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But it's good and it spreads to other things. It's the same thing. You can do like the 1 week variation.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's been a while since we watched a movie that we thought
that was
good.
Good all around, because we've always found redeeming things in a lot of the movies that we've been watching.
Was Resurrecting the Champ the last one we were like, good?
That was even slightly different because, like, we weren't even... this one we had been hyped up by, mainly because, Jake, you had seen it way earlier and said that you liked it. So we were like...
I watched this movie on an airplane flying back into the States, and it just happened to be one of the selections. And I was like, oh, shit. Oh, Lucy.
Right.
And I pressed play.
And at the time, we were doing the podcast, so you
right.
knew that it was on the list. So it was a happy coincidence because it had just come out, probably. Or like,
it had just come out. I think it was in theaters, or maybe it just finished its theatrical run.
Because this movie was, it did get its limited theatrical release when we were already recording this podcast. Because I remember having the conversation about, like, do we
see
this
it, yeah.
now? Or and we decided, let's wait.
We
until
did have
we
a kiboshed notion to go all go see the movie on opening day and then do a podcast and right afterwards.
Yeah. But then we decided, like, the point of this is to go on a journey through his career in chronological order, even if Jake the Overachiever will be like, I'm going to watch Penny Dreadful months early.
Months in advance.
I'm going to watch all the stuff. I'm Jake.
I can control time and space somehow to like watch everything.
You know what I didn't have to do because I did that and I had the foresight to do that?
What?
Is watch 7 episodes in a day like you did, Matt.
Yeah.
Day after my birthday. I got to relax.
That's true.
Yeah, and by relax,
stressfully like watch 7 hours of TV.
Yeah, so hot take, I don't love binge watching. I know that we're the generation
binge watching sucks.
Is supposed to love that. I kind of like to space things out. I like to do like maybe an episode a day.
Yeah.
That's my preferred way of watching a television show.
You should know it's bad because the word binge is in it. Unhealthy word.
It's like, you know, purging isn't good either.
Yeah. You know what happens when you binge? You throw up.
Hey, how about we start a horror movie franchise called The Binge?
The Binge.
That'd be cool. It's the prequel to The Purge.
But there was a prequel to The Purge. It was called The First Purge. It came open this summer.
Yeah, but that's the First Purge is still after The Binge.
Yeah, The Binge is when people made sweet love and had lots of kids.
Oh. What? So that's what happened. There was this sudden, like, there was like sex day, kind of like Purge day, where just like it led to this burst of overpopulation. 9 months later, all of a sudden there's like way too many babies.
Yeah, you binged and then you got a purge.
And then Marissa Tomei shows up and is like, I know, we'll murder them all. Because I saw the trailer to The First Purge. I haven't seen the movie, and that's what happens in it.
Exactly. Yeah, it'd be a positive movie.
The First Purge is just about venting violent impulse, right? It's not like a population control thing, right?
I don't know. I didn't see it.
Right. It's meant to be this societal experiment to be like, let's get this out of our system one day a year.
What if it was one day a year?
It seems like a terrible idea.
You mandated you have to be so, hug everybody, being so nice, and that's the binge.
The binge is you give people free hugs.
It's just like everyone has to be like sickly, sweet, nice to each other and like give each other presents.
That
and
sounds like
kisses.
That sounds like the premise for a mid-90s Jim Carrey movie where suddenly it like goes wrong.
The Truman Show vibes, but without ever the other foot falling.
Right.
He's just so nice.
Yeah. So, Blumhouse, if you're listening, I'm sure you are. You're not busy at all. Jason Blum, give us a call.
Jason, baby.
And the binge, it'll happen.
Bones. Hey, speaking of hugs.
Oh, Lucy.
Guess who gives a lot of them? Josh Hartnett in this movie.
Well, so, Oh, Lucy, for our listeners. And by the way, if you're listening to this now, this is one of the only movies in a long time that we're going to say you should actually, it's worth seeing.
Oh, seriously, go see it.
Also, it's on Hulu. If you have a Hulu account, it's streaming on there. Matt, I learned, it does not have a Hulu account.
If you pay $7.99 a month, it's free.
Yeah.
And if that doesn't make sense, you're right.
It's also, I believe, $5 to buy, maybe still on iTunes. And anyway, but it is a 2017 American-Japanese drama film written and directed by Atsuko Hironagi. And it is also, it is her debut film, and it is a feature-length version of a short film that she made in 2014.
Also
that
had called Oh Lucy.
Called Oh Lucy, that had its world premiere at the Cannes Film Festival.
Nice.
Where it won an Independent Spirit Award, didn't it?
Those are different things.
Whatever, I don't care.
Man, it won the Palm Branch Award or something.
It got branch.
It got branches.
It got a branch.
It won the Short Film Jury Award for International Fiction at the 2015 Sundance Film Festival.
Right. And she had done, I think, just a couple other short films before that.
Yeah, and interestingly, it is it's produced. One of the production companies involved is Gloria Sanchez Productions. So so Gary Sanchez Productions is Adam McKay and Will Ferrell's production company. And they not too long I think fairly recently they
is
only
that why Megan Mullally was in it?
Yes. Okay. I'm pretty sure.
All right.
In that weird but fun cameo.
Yeah. Well they you know that's the classic move, put a comedian in a small bit
role. And so but they started our Who is it? Oh yeah, Jessica Elbaum. Who
Jessica Alba's like cool nickname.
Elbaum.
Anyway. Hey. Or anyway.
She worked at Gary Sanchez Productions, and she founded this the sister label of them, which is for female voices in comedy. Their first film was Sleeping with Other People, and then this was their second film, and then they're working on a new one. This upcoming movie that Olivia Wilde is directing.
Nice. Sort I like of that. Gloria Sanchez
Productions. Our neighbor Olivia.
Oh yeah. God, we chat at the farmer's market.
Yeah. Matt and I live relatively close to her and Jason.
Oh, Jason. God, that guy's so funny.
Well, star of Sleeping with Other People. Yeah. So clearly we are neighbors with people involved in Gloria Sanchez Productions. So please don't accuse us of being biased about liking this movie just because we're neighbors with people involved in the production.
We're deeply involved in a lot of lives of a lot of people involved.
And our hands were all in this movie,
and we had a little bit of script help.
But so anyway, this is all a long way of saying that it's kind of funny to see executive producers Adam McKay and Will Ferrell in this almost entirely Japanese indie drama.
Yeah,
which is great, and this is like definitely in the vein of dark comedy.
Mm-hmm. You wouldn't tell it by looking at the movie poster either, which is a very bright, colorful thing.
And it's mostly a drama, and especially because I'd say, is there like a 40-60 split between Japan and California?
Yeah, it's front-loaded most of the introductory scenes for maybe like the first half hour of the movie?
Or in
Japan, and then pretty much the rest of the movie, save for like the last 6 or 7 minutes.
I'd say last 10 minutes.
Last 10 minutes are in L.A.
And San Diego. But all of the Japan scenes are so gray.
Yeah.
And so drab and bleak. And that's an intentional choice. Mm-hmm. It is not meant to look like a place with a lot of life and fun in it.
No.
And so I'll read the very, very brief plot summary on Wikipedia. So it is about a woman named Setsuko. Her last name is
Kawashima.
So Setsuko is a lonely, chain-smoking office lady in Tokyo who is past her prime. After deciding to take an English class, she discovers a new identity in her American alter ego, Lucy, and falls for her instructor, John. Who's Josh?
As Josh Hartnett.
When John suddenly disappears, Setsuko earnestly sets out on a quest to find him, eventually leading her to the outskirts of Southern California. That's relatively accurate. It leaves out some details, but that's basically it. It's about this sad, lonely Japanese woman. Okay, we should just say the very beginning of the movie.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
This is a movie. I also
cold open.
I heard. I was looking forward to it. I heard it was good, but I watched the trailer and I had it in my head that it was a bit more of a comedy than it actually is.
The trailer makes it very emphasis on like wacky,
yes,
as opposed to
100%
grim.
And to be fair, Jake did tell us like, it's like more dramatic than you might be expecting.
Honestly, the misleading nature of the trailer probably gives you good legal standing to sue. Probably the production company for misrepresentation.
And we would like to start a class action lawsuit.
Kind of like the woman who sued the production company that released Drive because she was expecting something more like a Fast and Furious movie, and then it was not that.
And Ryan Gosling
stomped on someone's head in an elevator. She was like, this isn't about family.
Yeah. And my class action lawsuit is still in the preparatory stages.
Who are you suing?
Just a little director of a certain film about a certain man named Max who's mad. And I'll tell you who was extra mad was me when I found out that it was about chicks or something.
Oh, no. And Matt didn't like O Fortuna. What's her name? I can't remember.
Furiosa?
Furiosa. Oh, Furiosa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
O Fortuna.
Whatever.
I watched a movie about an angry man, and it was mostly about angry women.
Hey, I just love the idea of a guy sitting in the theater just going, hey, just like 20 minutes into the movie.
What?
Then every 10 minutes, come on!
This does remind me of one of my favorite Lionel Hutz quotes of all time, which is, "Mr. Simpson, this is the worst case of false advertising I've seen since my suit against the makers of the film The Neverending Story."
That's so good.
I also had, as a child, had problems with that.
Oh, the fact that The Neverending Story ends?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is weird.
I guess theoretically it doesn't, in that it lives in the minds of the readers, and each new reader gives it more life, and that's kind of the theme. So I was wrong as a child, but yeah, hey, I was a child, and I was stupid.
Also, just like life.
Movies bleed into real life when you're a kid. Easier.
Right, but, and like our lives are... Actually, no, if our lives are stories, they definitely end.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. Maybe.
No.
You know.
But then our story is carried on. By the survivors and those who knew us.
The survivors. That's how I'm going to consider every human being alive while I'm dying is a survivor.
You're a Matt Torpy survivor.
Yeah, you're a Matt Torpy. You mean you lived through his reign?
The world did not end with me?
Yeah, what an egotistical view.
I'll sell t-shirts. I survived Matt Torpy.
God, talk about my ex-wife about that one.
Yuck.
Hey, she's a real battle axe.
So this movie opens up with a woman jumping in front of a train.
A man?
It's a man.
A man.
God damn it, Jake. You're trying to make him a woman too?
No,
I'm going to sue you.
The opening is great. So it's all these people waiting for a train on a very crowded platform. Yeah. And you hear this humming. And then you see our main character, Setsuko, who has one of the little, like, just germ masks on.
Well,
like,
everybody has
everyone one. has the masks on, and because it's in Tokyo.
But then she does more than other people.
Yes. And then you realize that the humming is coming from this guy standing right behind her, who's, like, basically, like, humming into the back of her head. And then he just kind of pushes past her and then jumps in front of the train. And that's how the movie opens.
What, he says something to, like...
He does. I can't remember.
He says something just like, "I'm sick of it all."
It's weird that, yeah, but it's just like, he says some like kind of like almost like faux cheery thing. Like, sorry for the inconvenience. And then he just dives in front of a train or something like that.
Gets splatted.
And that's how the movie opens.
It's like the first minute of the film.
Right. But it's also, and she isn't super affected by it.
No.
She just goes to work.
Well, I think, you know, this movie is also, like you said, Pat, like pretty like, it's a Japanese movie. It deals with a lot of cultural themes that might potentially hit harder with a Japanese audience.
I mean, Japan is the country that produced the film Suicide Club,
which has the same opening.
Yeah,
albeit very different.
A lot more of it.
And there are three instances of suicide in the film. There
and
is
one mentioned instance of suicide.
No, that's it. I mean, there's that opening one. There is an attempted suicide from one character, from one supporting character, and then in the final scene, there is a mention of it. So yeah, suicide is not that like the main character is suicidal, but there is that sort of just idea of death. And, like, you know, leaving this bleak existence.
Right. Like, what use are you? I mean,
especially
Setsuka
as like,
this person offing themselves probably, like, seeds her own idea, but she is just numbed to the core. So she just, like, sees it. She somehow gets to work a little late and just, like, does
to her gray office.
Her just does her shitty job where everyone is, like, faux enthusiastic about their work. And she is barely keeping this veneer of enthusiasm.
You can tell she's like about to crack mentally.
And then she goes after work. Her niece wants to meet with her. And her niece works at this cafe where all the waitresses dress as maids. Mm-hmm. It's like a maid cafe. And
it's so weird, but like it's a maid cafe where when you order stuff, you have to meow like a cat and...
Yeah.
Like, there's like weird fetish things involved with it, I was like, is this like a kink cafe?
Can we explain that? Because I love it. She's pouring milk in her coffee or tea.
Yeah.
And says, instead of just saying like, say when, she goes like, when it's enough, meow like a kitty.
Yeah.
And then Setsuko,
like, meow, meow.
And then Setsuko goes, meow. And just like this little like sort of paw wave. And basically, so what is her name? Mika,
yeah.
Mika is her niece. Also, a key point that we also learn in terms of how just kind of generally sad Setsuko's life is, she had a boyfriend once.
Yes, this is important.
She had a boyfriend, and then her sister stole her boyfriend and married him, and that, and then Mika is her niece now.
Yeah. Which, and so they sort of leave you with the impression that Setsuko almost never quite got over that and has sort of probably lived
she just didn't
alone
get over
since then.
I mean,
yeah.
you look at her home where yeah. she's a huge hoarder.
Yeah.
And it looks like other human beings do not go into her home.
Do not enter this.
She just crawls through just giant piles of her belongings just strewn about in a completely unrecognizable living space. And then she just mostly just lays in giant piles of her clothes and, like, smokes and watches TV.
Yeah. So she's sad.
Yeah.
And
it's urban... you know, it's funny. You were talking about how it maybe speaks more strongly to, a Japanese audience member.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I would think, like, a lot of the weird, depressing gray colors is just pretty relatable to any urban environment. Like, when I watch this movie... As someone that rides the subway train, I mean, like, The subway train. I live here, I swear to God. I'm not an alien.
I ride the choo-choo to walk.
But just that sort of, like, spiritual vacuum, that urban alienation.
Well, there's, like,
stuff.
Urban anhedonia. Yeah. But, like, this has, you know, I don't know. There's a Japanese flavor, it seems, to it.
Oh, yeah.
The notion of suicide obviously exists outside, but there's, like...
Also, people...
There's more of a prevalence culturally to its acceptance in Japan.
And this is just things that I've heard. I don't have the research in front of me. But isn't suicide by train far more common in, like, Tokyo than other cities?
Huh. I'm not sure, but I mean...
If I'm wrong...
There's a suicide forest, so what am I supposed to do?
Right.
I mean?
If I'm wrong, tell me, please. Email us, hearthartnet@gmail.com. I'm sorry
Send
if my facts
Send us suicide
are wrong.
Statistics, please, about Tokyo.
Whatever, we were talking about the Holocaust last episode.
And
so,
Armenian
and
genocide.
So it's like, come on.
But like, and then the other thing is
we
like...
Get dark.
The other two things that, you know, I am ill-informed on, but seemed to have a very, like, cultural specificity to Japan were... Women of that age in that environment. So, like, marriageable women who are, like, in this, I don't know what you'd call it, just, like, maybe more staid traditional society, or at least, like, the remnants of the tradition are still, like, pretty strong.
Mm-hmm.
In Tokyo specifically, which is just, like, you're just, like, in your little slot in this giant, like, honeycomb of human people just, like, stacked on top of each other, and it's really easy to just, yeah, have the lonely crowd syndrome or whatever.
Yeah.
What you're saying, like, while there are elements that are specific to Tokyo, it just does capture the feeling of being alone in a giant
amongst other people.
City really well, and the color palette is really effective, and just, like, right away, like, it pretty efficiently, this is a short film.
Yeah.
It's, like,
crisp 90 minutes.
90 minutes long, but you get a sense of this woman pretty quickly. And so anyway, she meets with her niece, Mika.
Yep, at the cafe.
Who's like, hey, I signed up for all these for like this English class, and I already paid for it, but I don't want to take it anymore. But will you like take the rest of the classes off my hands and just like go to it for me? And she's like, fine, whatever.
Yeah, I got nothing else going on. It's like this or I go back to my
hoarder
apartment.
But the key is, you know... She's like, I also, like, you know, need the money back for this class. Like, I need that more than I need to take this dumb English class. So, do you mind?
It feels less like a donation of money and more like an exchange if she lies to herself and pretends that giving her the English classes that she hasn't finished yet is a fair trade.
They
she
also
just wants
establish,
the money.
Like, she's supposedly the cool aunt, or at least she's been led to believe that, like... She probably has strange, conflicting feelings about Mika as, like, a stand-in daughter she could have had if she had stayed with the guy that her sister had stolen.
Yep.
Also, I don't think that her sister is still with
the guy
anymore. So,
no,
like,
that
relationship also failed, and now both are alone, and one just
And they don't really
resentment.
Like each other.
And they don't like each other, because one clearly, like, at least got left with money or something. Like, she's just, like, better off, like, kept up. And has, like, this, like, beautiful child that she... So, whatever. So, it's, like...
One other thing to note. Wait, so how old is Mika supposed to be?
She seemed like she was supposed to be 20...
22
or 3.
Okay, yeah. Well, because I was just looking it up. The actress who plays Setsuko, whose actual name Atsuko is the director.
Shinobu Terajima. She's
like very famous in Japan.
She's great.
But she was only like maybe like 43.
She's in a really cool movie called Caterpillar that people should check out.
I should check that out.
Yeah.
She's in her like early 40s. And presumably her sister is around the same, like early to mid 40s.
Yeah.
And so I was just trying to figure out like, okay, like ages exactly and stuff like that.
Young, I mean.
Yeah. And because Mika's mother doesn't show up for a little while in the film.
Right. Yeah.
And anyway, but so.
She goes to these English classes.
The place that the English class is held is weird.
It's really, really cool.
If you look at the signs, it's like a massage parlor with happy endings. Guaranteed happy ending, yeah.
So. I don't think it's totally uncommon, though, to just have these strange. I think we have them in New York City, too. Like these just odd little buildings that feel run down, but each room is essentially a open for rent space for any sort of small business that wants to pay.
Right. Did I tell you
it looks like a karaoke bar.
It's a karaoke bar on the first floor.
Dingy massage parlor where you get jerked off. Like, right. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, and but this is like the sort of office where the English classes are held. There's like a different class in each room. But I mean, it looks similar to like just honestly the karaoke places in K-Town where there's like all the separate rooms and like the front desk.
Yeah, you go up one floor and there's like this restaurant, and then you go up the next floor, it's the karaoke bar. And you look up the stairwell and you see like three other floors with doors open, lights coming out, and you're like, what is going on in this building?
Yeah, and it's owned by like this. The bar is owned by like this weird guy with just sunglasses on, who's like constantly like dozing and smoking.
And then
this lady and like this like trans like
there's a trans woman.
Trans woman,
yeah, who's always wearing like a red leather like jacket and skirt.
Yeah,
and they're always kind of laughing at Sasuke as she comes in. Right,
They're just these like weird cool people,
but they seem vaguely criminal as well.
Yeah,
like, there's like this sense that they are just constantly like running vague scams or that dupe people.
Yeah, right. Everything in this building has the air of, or like maybe a tangential association with some kind of criminal activity.
What was that? This is like a non sequitur. What was that weird Japanese movie also about that trans woman? It's in black and white. It's like an old 60s movie.
Oh, Funeral Parade of Roses?
Yeah.
I don't know how I called that title up as fast as I did. Funeral Parade of Roses.
Just a quick
recommend. Did you watch that on Filmstruck?
I don't think so, actually. I don't think it's a Criterion film.
But that's just a quick recommendation.
Filmstruck doesn't only have Criterion.
I don't think Turner has it either, though. Turner Classic Movies. I don't think TCM has it either.
Oh, that's a shame. Anyway, you guys should watch that movie as well.
That movie's really good.
From 1969.
Yeah.
Anyway,
saucer.
So she goes to take an English class. She goes sent to this room, and at this point, because I knew Josh was going to be the teacher, I was so excited. I was like,
"Yeah!"
I was already. I almost
what's in the room?
The big unveiling.
Josh, he's there. Just to have Josh arrive in a good movie for the first time in so long, I was excited.
And you can feel it right away too. His performance is like just more engaged.
He's got a real character to play. Like, he's been cast as a lot of bland characters where there's not a lot going on. I mean, like, what is he in Wild Horses? There's, like, very little there for him to do.
He's a cowboy.
Sure, yeah. But, like, but this is...
Done.
There is so much to this character.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
And he starts off and you see just his weird, silly huckster side. Because he teaches this English class, but the way that he teaches the English class is so ridiculous.
I wouldn't say huckster. He seems like a sincere kind of like nerd who cares a lot and has like his funny methods.
You're right.
But because his thing is he doesn't shake their hands. He hugs
them
because I think this is all sort of a cultural thing. People are like
more reserved
in Japan, because when Setsuko comes in and he gives her a big hug, she is at first really taken aback.
Yeah,
and
she gets totally rigid.
Well, really uncomfortable.
Do you ever see those videos of like Japanese businessmen taking courses and how to emote and things like that?
No,
like,
I haven't seen that.
Like people going, okay, you're going to go to whatever, like ex-Western European or North American place to do business. It's cool to like laugh. And cool to shake hands and all this kind of like weird stuff that you take for granted. I'm sure that's like becoming less and less of a barrier, but there's what they kind of establish also in this movie, though, is how the corporate thing works. Like that right. one, that one woman who has the you know retirement party.
Oh yeah,
and it's like, thank you for caring for me for 42 years, and they're like, yeah. Of course, you've done such a good job, and they like bow, and then they like go out to
they
like,
go out
have
to
a celebration,
like a little celebration where they finally probably after all of those 42 years of yeah. service finally cut loose for the one time they're allowed to. Yeah,
I think like here in the U.S., at least like corporate culture is a little like destabilized, and there tends to be a lot of like. This weird, uncharted, like, oh, we're kind of friends, and like,
yeah.
you can play ping pong with me and tell me to fuck off, and but also like, I am your boss
and
I can fire
work.
You and like do the work, and also there's no job security and yeah. like, fuck you, and but like, you're my friend.
Yeah, it is a very, it's a little confusing.
Yeah, and then like, I think it's just a lot more like maybe structured around
Stead
a notion of stability and yeah. care.
So it's obviously like a weird surprise. When Josh Hartnett comes in, my favorite...
Looking good in a vest.
Looking real crisp.
And glasses.
Yeah.
And a tie.
New haircut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He gets her to emote, though.
A bit of his classic facial hair.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That
and
lovely
little,
little mustache
yeah.
and a little wispy chin, chinny chin chin. And my favorite thing, though, that he does in his new class is just the saying hi. And he's like, first off, when you want to say hi, because, you know...
Because he's teaching Setsuko? American English
yeah.
specifically. He's like, you're going to like talk in the more relaxed,
yeah.
casual way that Americans do.
And she's so buttoned up, Setsuko, you know, so he's like, say hello to me, say hi. And she's like, hi. And he's like, no. Hi. He does like these funny, like, no, try it with me. Hi. He keeps going this really high-pitched
and
high,
like,
and it just gets funnier and funnier the more
he's
he does
like, we're
going
to just open your mouth more. Ha! And then he puts a ping pong,
a ping
ball,
pong
in mouth,
ball in her
yeah,
mouth
which,
as a practice,
and the ping
and
pong ball does come back in the end as like a symbol.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but that's his big thing. He's going to get her to open her mouth more, be more expressive, and
yeah.
then because he has a sign up in his class that says English only zone or like
yeah.
only English spoken here, and so she doesn't even use her Japanese name. He has this like this. Box of name tags of like English like, or American names that she picks one and she gets Lucy, and so she's Lucy in the class, and he gives her this curly blonde wig to wear.
Yeah,
and so and this is really what begins this change in her,
and this is what's
yeah.
funny too is that this is now the setup to the more standard quirky indie comedy,
right?
Oh, there's this outsized English teacher who made this depressed Japanese woman put on a blonde wig and like try and get out of her shell. You're like, now here's the part where we get the touching. She it does come out of her shell, and like
yeah.
suddenly it's like this funny comedy of errors as she explores this side to herself that she had like thought was dead.
You
for
could
so
easily
long.
See
and
this whole movie taking
what
place
happens.
In Tokyo
yeah.
where there's like the scene where she wears the wig to work
mm-hmm.
and she starts like asking people to call her Lucy, and she sort of like realizes that by becoming someone else and stepping out of like who she is, she becomes more comfortable.
I did not buy the that's the one problem I had that was not maybe drawn clearly enough for me was I didn't buy her development of a split, like an alter ego that then compelled her to do these more rash things.
I think she just sort of falls in love with them so quickly. Becomes kind of sort of infatuated.
Yeah,
by
for me, I didn't think of it that much as like an alter ego sort of thing, as like becoming
mm-hmm.
someone else. I, like for me, it was a bit more of she suddenly has like motivation in the way that she hasn't before.
She's had nothing in her life, and this she was going to grasp at anything that comes her way.
Right, like the first person to show any kind of affection toward her.
Yeah,
the hug really opens her up. That's
yeah.
like the big moment in the first introductory scene with Josh.
And there's also another guy in the class whose American name is Tom.
Tom and Lucy.
Who wears a brown wig.
Yes.
It is pretty funny.
Tom's great.
Oh yeah, Tom's really good. And so she has this class, and she really likes it.
Mm-hmm.
And wait, is it right after that class that she goes to
yeah.
the going away party
for her coworker?
Also, kind of to say, so her coworker who's leaving, when like they announced that like on her last day, and everyone's like saying goodbye to her at work, one of the other coworkers just gives her a giant teddy bear. Yeah. And I was like, is that normal in Japanese offices? Because yeah. I'm pretty sure, okay, actually, I've never worked in an office, so maybe you guys can tell me.
You've never worked in a Japanese office?
No, in an IT office.
I'm joking.
So you guys can tell me, in American offices,
I mean, I don't know.
Is it customary for someone to receive a giant, like, 4-foot-tall teddy bear when they're leaving?
Never. Never.
Potentially.
When potentially?
If you've been there for 42 years and you're a grandmotherly type, you can get some big-ass flowers or, like, a big present.
Maybe not a big teddy bear. I don't know.
And also, this woman is not grandmotherly.
No.
She's also, like, 40.
Is she? Maybe 50s.
Maybe, like, not that old.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, still, like, middle-aged. Basically, I didn't get the sense that she was retiring.
I thought she'd spent 42 years in the company, she was retiring, and she was, like, 60 years old.
I did not feel that way.
But a huge-ass teddy bear for a retirement gift does seem weird to me.
Yeah, give me a big
like,
Rolex.
Like, what are you doing with that? Yeah.
But she goes to the party. This is definitely more exemplary of, like, the tone of the film. Lucy, you think, she goes to this quirky meeting with this English teacher. She has a good time. She's like, I'll keep taking the classes. I'll pay for it. I like this. And it's because she's starting to have this incipient feeling for Josh. She keeps the blonde wig on as she's leaving and goes to the party for her coworker, who she's been established to not like, because that coworker is cheery in a way that sickens Setsuko. And
she's
like,
kind of a suck up to a boss too, that she's always had a distaste for as
right.
well.
So and when she starts crying when everyone's being nice to her at her like going away thing, Setsuko starts kind of snickering
yep.
in this mean way that I've definitely done in my office.
Matt's a bad person. That's like a thing that we should make very clear.
Yeah.
Jake and I would never do that. We're nice people.
Yeah.
No, I but don't. Snicker.
I suck, and I'm
poison. I laugh with people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Never at.
No, never at.
Yeah. Yeah. I always laugh at people, and I always punch down.
Because Matt's afraid that if he punches up, someone bigger and more powerful will punch back.
Oh, yeah. God. And I mean, the weak should fear the strong, and I do.
Yeah. Matt's mean and sniveling.
And cowardly.
That's his dynamic in this group. That's why he's the Gollum of the group.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the Gollum of the group. I'm also like the cult leader in Mandy.
As in, you're always wearing robes with your dick out.
My dick's out, but then if anyone threatens me physically, I'm like, I'll suck yours.
That movie's so crazy.
Sorry, that is a bit of a spoiler.
You're also in some ways like MacGruber.
And a little bit like MacGruber. Yeah, I'm resourceful.
Very crafty and resourceful.
Yeah, but pathetic.
Yeah.
But
also a coward.
But also a coward.
Anyway, this is a podcast about the film MacGruber, one of the great
man.
Films of the 21st century.
Well, she does something that I think a lot of people fantasize about, right? Because
Which
if
is
you
just
work
say,
in
you
an
dumb
office,
bitch, no one actually liked you, and yeah. they all talk shit behind your back, like, good luck with the rest of your next chapter in your life.
Yeah, like, all these people here, you think they're being so nice, everybody's giving you little shoulder rubs and back pats and saying what a good job you did for your full 42 years. Meanwhile, I've sat here for a large chunk of that time, too, and heard all the back talk and the gossip and the... And all, like, the shit-talking that's happened about
but
you behind your
so
back.
But she is so mean.
She's like, so mean.
Hey, listen, you
in
fat
in a way that makes
pig,
you super upset.
Like,
yeah.
No one actually likes you. People couldn't wait for you to leave.
Yeah.
So enjoy the next chapter in your life knowing that, like, everyone thought you were a laughingstock. Bye.
And you're very... And you're just closer to death.
And, this, yeah, and it's interesting yeah. because it's not like she just had a bad thing happen
yeah.
to her to put her in a bad mood. She
right.
had a good thing happen to her, but it just sort of opened her up.
It freed out venom rather than... some sort of whimsical character, which makes more sense because she's just been sitting stockpiling poison
yeah
for years now.
She's yeah. got it like locked and loaded.
Oh yeah,
ready to go.
She's like the big umbrella looking dinosaur from Jurassic Park.
She's like a Dilophosaurus.
Dilophosaurus, thank
and,
you.
And
don't
that
worry,
woman is Newman.
You.
And that woman is Newman. And we didn't mean for her to also be
Newman,
another heavyset character, but
that's just the way the analogy crumbled.
Hey, you know, when you got an analogy.
Well, hey, she at least gets her big old teddy bear and gets to go home on the train. And then,
well, she's obviously a happier person. That's the point. It's like,
right.
That Setsuka has like a moment of regret when she sees her on the subway platform where she says,
like,
I'm sorry.
Across the platform, she tells, I'm sorry, multiple times. And the woman just kind of ignores her and gets on the train.
So she's not just like
Well, she's also worried because she saw the suicide at the beginning of the film, that the train's approaching. They build it up as if suddenly she's like, she thinks maybe she said something cutting enough that would make her jump in front of the train suddenly.
And don't worry.
Which is projecting.
She will cause someone's attempted suicide later in the film.
Yeah. So if anybody was watching that scene and going, oh, damn it.
I really do like that, though. Like, you walk this fine line where this woman is so sad and repressed and pathetic, and you do root for her, but the movie really does like create enough of this tension where she's also a completely horrible person and a bad influence,
just bitter, worn down.
This way that like she just keeps lashing out and really hurting people, and like so you also kind of don't like her.
Yeah,
it's great. It's just finally there's like dimension in some people, and Josh also gets that dimension.
Yeah, he does. And so suddenly this class, it's like she has some sort of purpose for the first time in so long. It's a place where people seem to care about her.
Yeah,
because Josh's thing, he's very much the sort of like affectionate, outgoing American.
Yeah.
You know, he likes to hug and make big gestures and is friendly in a way that no one she really encounters is.
Yep.
And then Tom,
by extension.
Yeah, and then Tom, and you know, he's also like opening up another, the other Japanese classmate. And then after that, then she goes back to class the following day, or does something else happen?
Well, she goes back to class, and he's not there, right?
Right. That's the key thing. She goes back to the class, and they're like, oh, John quit. There's no class.
Yeah, he had to go back to America.
But then, and so that's a surprise, but then it gets more surprising. Mm-hmm. Because then she steps outside into the street, and then at the end of the block, she sees a taxi pull up, and John, not dressed like he was in class, no glasses, no vest.
No sweater.
No tie, gets out of the taxi.
Pretty cash looking.
Very, very
cash.
Pretty
slackery.
And then she waves to him, and then he waves to someone else.
Classic.
To Mika, her niece, exiting, I think, maybe even her job.
Job, yeah.
A little bit closer, who runs over to John, and they kiss.
Gives him a big smooch on the lips.
And then they get into the taxi, and it leaves. And she's like, what the fuck just happened?
My niece kissing my new crush? John?
And then, but like also, he quit and is going back to America. And apparently my niece, who like I didn't realize had any sort of relationship with him at all, is going with him? Like, what is happening?
And
then she tries to call Mika, and it says this number has been disconnected.
Right.
And she's
right.
like, what is happening?
So she goes finally now to her estranged sister. I think this is the first time this character
shows up
in the movie. Her estranged sister, who, as Matt has already mentioned.
Well, she calls her sister first, and it's like, hey, does Mika have a new number? What's the deal? And she's like, oh, she's going to America.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I've given up on that girl. She's like so exasperated.
This is Setsuko's sister, Ayako? I don't know.
Hey. Ayako.
Yeah. Ayako.
But apologies to Japanese listeners if we're giving our best effort to pronouncing the Japanese names. But see, in the way that obviously Setsuko did a great job trying to learn English. We have not done as good a job trying to learn Japanese.
Yes.
Exactly. So she goes to her sister and basically gives her the information. She's like, I think Mika left town. Her sister doesn't even know either. She's like,
yeah, she said something about leaving.
Contact with, yeah.
Like, I'm done trying to figure out or trying to like dictate her life. Like, she's going to do whatever. And, but through the context clues that her sister is offering, Setsuko realizes that the money that she had given Mika for the class was actually the money that John and Mika both used to get a flight out of the country and start anew in California.
And so, and then she goes back, she finds out that they have a new teacher for the English class. She goes to that, and then it's just this woman who wants to shake her hand, not hug her.
Yeah.
And she's like, no.
F that.
Not what F I want. That. But then, she...
F that, man.
And then she gets a postcard from Mika, mm-hmm. from California, that has an address on it. So she gets her sister, is like, I know where she is. Let's go get her back. Really, she's not very interested in getting Mika back. She just wants to see John.
Exactly. And who wouldn't?
He's hot.
And this is where Josh's natural sexiness.
Well, don't get ahead of yourself. Comes into play. Because then there's a whole thing where, you know, they go to the airport. They have all these disagreements at the airport, the two sisters, mm-hmm. In terms of, like, you know, Setsuko goes and gets herself, like a drink. And then her sister's like, oh, you didn't even, like, ask me if I wanted anything. That's really selfish of you. And so they have, like squabbles there.
Oh, yeah. It's a really good character building, just their dynamic at the airport.
Yeah.
To,
and then,
like,
and then they're
sisters,
on the plane,
so like,
and sitting between them is Megan Mullally on the,
yeah,
on the plane.
So random, but funny.
And
you'll remember her from a little show called Will and Grace.
Which is back. It's on and TV
it,
now.
It's back, baby.
Yeah.
We're all begging for it.
America was. I mean,
no, it's true.
Was that the
bring back Dharma and Greg?
I know, right? If Will and Grace is back, Dharma and Greg should come back. That doesn't make no sense.
Will and Greg.
And Roseanne came back and then was Dharma canceled and then got rebooted minus Roseanne.
Oh, so weird. It's called The Conners now or whatever.
I've never seen an
just
episode of
Roseanne.
Just
make a new show.
Just cancel the show, guys. Yeah.
It was sort of a savvy move just in terms of, like, how, because it was a big hit when it came back.
I know.
And so they're like, they managed to find a way to keep their hit while getting rid of, like, the toxic element of it.
While getting rid of the main character.
Yeah, but look, they still got John Goodman. And so, look, even though I don't watch that show and never will, I'm glad John Goodman is in successful stuff because he is a national treasure.
He is.
And deserves nothing
but underrated to this day.
Only good things to happen. Does he have an Oscar?
I don't know.
I don't think
man.
He does.
That's a
I don't
damn
think
shame.
So.
But do you remember when Roseanne sang the
got
national
it for
anthem?
Llewyn Davis.
Yes,
that when was Rose, that was pretty funny.
That was funny. I forgot about that. Yeah.
That was back when she was like
that was like a performance art piece again.
Yeah,
she just went out there and sang it so terribly.
Yeah,
and then went on many subsequent apology interviews where she said, "I was trying the best I could." And she's clearly lying.
As she's continued to do.
Yeah.
But this was a funny one.
I really tried to sing that as well as I could.
I promise.
Can you imagine?
I promise.
You said I promise.
It's not like Scott Stapp when he's just clearly drunk and he's like, yeah. And he's at a NASCAR event and everyone's going crazy like they love it, but he cannot hit a single note because he's so plastered.
Guys, John Goodman has never even been nominated for an Oscar.
Oh my fucking God.
He deserves an honorary Lifetime Achievement Award. He's
going to get one of those pity Oscars when he's like way old.
Oh yeah, but I mean he won a Golden Globe and was nominated four more times, but those were all for Roseanne. And he won an Emmy Award and it has been nominated for like 10 more. He's never even gotten an Oscar nomination.
God damn.
John Goodman.
The fuck? He's going to get something for like Monsters University or something too.
No, like they're going to just do that thing where they give it to a movie that doesn't deserve
it. We're Back gets a retroactive Oscar.
Yeah.
Oh man, I love We're Back. He just gets an Oscar for that.
We realized
our best dinosaur voice.
We fucked up in 93.
Dude, we fucked up.
You get a retroactive honorary Oscar for Fred Flintstone. Good job, John Goodman.
You know, what's the name of his robot in Transformers? He should get one for that. Diesel? What is it?
I don't know.
He plays a robot called Diesel.
He plays one. No, wait, he plays one. He looks like a dwarf general.
John Goodman's Transformer has a beard. But
has
it's
a
like
beard
but it's
made
a,
out of like
it's
metal,
a metal
shavings.
Beard.
But does it swing and like blow in the breeze a little
yes.
bit?
Yes. Yes. And whenever he's like bounding around, it's like swaying and shaking and all the strands of metal hair.
And he has an infinite sort of like metal cigar.
Yeah.
That he smokes constantly.
Ooh, which Transformers is this? The first
That's
one?
What I'm trying.
This is Transformers the Last Night.
Oh,
the
I
last
haven't seen
which
it.
Is the fifth one. Oh, I just recently watched it. It is I was telling Matt I have not been so confused at the end of a movie since the first time I saw Mulholland Drive. It is one of the strangest, most confusing films I've ever seen. It is fascinating in a lot of ways. There is a lot of it is very bad, but some of it is like Some of it is cool. Some of it is like intentionally funny. Some is unintentionally funny. It's so strange. I mean, again, the first like 15 minutes are all about like King Arthur and set during the Dark Ages, and Stanley Tucci is Merlin, and then Merlin brings a robotic three-headed dragon to save the Knights of the Round
Table.
He's
like, all right, we'll make form the dragon and blow fire and kill the other army.
And then you learn
for no reason other than that it was close. Because why would like interstellar beings from planet Cybertron?
Mega Man.
But also, and that was the beginning of the order of the Witwickens.
Yes, bro.
Wait, Jake, do you know about the Witwickens?
Yeah, the Witwickens the society of super geniuses and famous people. And Shia LaBeouf is in the Witwickens.
Yes.
That is
he's
correct.
Walter Witwicken.
No, he will not divide
Sam
us.
Witwicky.
He's Sam Witwickens. He will Witwicken not divide
us. And then what I'm still not sure about, because the title is Transformers The Last Night. And The Last Night turns out to be Mark Wahlberg, who, lest we forget,
is
named Cade Yeager. Because that's what Texan inventors are named.
Because Cade, awesome, sounds like cage. Jaeger,
like Chuck Yeager,
dope. Broke a record. Dope.
Or like Jaeger, the robot, the Gundam robot. Thingy.
Yeah, the Jaegers.
No, but this is
or it, like Jaegermeister, the
but
cool
this is,
drink.
This
you
isn't
drink.
This isn't spelled like the robot way or Jaegermeister with a J. This isn't spelled the German way. This is spelled with a Y, like Chuck Yeager. But he is the...
Our point still stands, though.
Yeah.
Sure. No, also, my son's going to be named Cade Yeager-Torpy.
CYT.
You know, the thing is...
CYT. Cade Yeager-Torpy.
Look, the first film with Cade Yeager, Transformers Age of Extinction, made over $1 billion. So odds are that there is some person, some man out there, who is such a big fan of that movie that he might name his son Cade Yeager.
Oh, I'm sure that already has to be.
I hope so. But, okay, this is an episode about Oh, Lucy, but I want to make something clear, because if any of our listeners can clarify this for me, I would really appreciate it. So, Cade Yeager turns out to be the last knight of the title. The guy who can wield sort of a kind of Excalibur and
like
to
that's awesome.
Staff.
And,
dude,
and freaking awesome. That's fucking
and,
awesome.
And who will defeat Quintessa, who's like the evil Transformer goddess.
Oh, drink sirens, drink your Everclear.
There's
drink
your sirens.
Put on that song by Everclear.
Yeah,
the villains are striking again. But
who plays Quintessa?
Quintessa. Oh, she's Quintessa. A robot. She's a robot.
She's a CGI.
Who voices
character?
I believe it's Gemma Chan.
Gemma Chan.
Who is a Chinese actress who she's a bunch of stuff. She doesn't get to appear in live action in the baffling last scene. But okay, it seems like Cade Yeager gets to be the last knight. He's this like prophesized hero, because early on in the movie, this weird
good thing she's Gemma Chan, because you know Mark Wahlberg has no problem dealing with that sort of ethnicity.
Oh,
you're bringing up his crime. It's like took me a second.
Lest
blinding
we forget,
a Korean person.
How old was he when he did that?
Yeah, he committed a hate crime and blinded a Vietnamese man as a teen.
Hey. Aspire to be better.
Aspire 4 a.m. club, waking up, 12
miles,
doing lunches.
But the point I want to make is, at some point early on in the movie, this like robotic medallion just kind of latches onto Mark Wahlberg's body, and then is on there. And there's never a reason given for why this thing latched onto him, but he turns out to be just like the prophesized last knight who will save the world, because this thing is attached to his body.
It's much like the Guyver.
Exactly. But like the female lead in the movie, they reveal that she is actually the descendant of Merlin, and that's why she can wield this staff given to Merlin by Transformers. But there's nothing special
given to Merlin by Transformers?
Look, it makes sense. But there's nothing special about Cade Yeager, and I'm like, why did this thing attach itself to him? Why is he special? Why is he the guy who can wield the sword?
It's destiny.
I can't also, tell you. This movie is so confusing.
His biceps are the only things that are big enough to handle the whatever the thing.
Guys, you know what's a great movie? Pain and Gain. I rewatched it yesterday.
That's a whole other story. I would love to talk about Pain and Gain.
I would. This is an episode about Oh Lucy.
Oh Lucy. So they go to America to find Mika. They have and they go to Josh's. Well, no.
Josh's apartment. In L.A. And he is very confused when he answers the door, and there are two 40-something Japanese women with suitcases there.
Right.
Yeah.
And also, and it's great because now Joss is like in shorts and like a
his
t-shirt.
His hair is tussled.
He looks
messy.
Like almost a throwback kind of early 2000s California guy. Like,
yeah.
like board shorts or something. Like,
yeah. Yeah. It's great. And flip-flops. And he's like, Mika left.
Me
and yeah, and it suddenly he went from seeming like this really like this teacher who was really prepared and enthusiastic about what he did and seemed like really together, and suddenly it's like, oh, this guy is a mess,
right? Yeah. And he was just performing a character, also,
right? Also, he probably just sort of stayed in Japan doing his job.
I know,
but one of my favorite things about this movie is that there's sort of two movies going on. Like, Setsuko's story kind of collides with Josh Hartnett's story, and he's kind of in his own separate movie. Because as that goes on, you learn more about him. You learn about his relationship with Mika, but also how he has a wife and a child.
Yeah.
And he's just this total fuck-up, and he has this all this other stuff going on, and it's like her story intersects with his, but the more you learn about him, you realize, oh, there could just be a whole like side like companion piece movie just about him because there's so much going on in this guy's life. And
it's great.
And this is like this weird couple days in his life.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's almost so resigned by the just turmoil that's constantly now going on around him because he's just attracts this kind of thing and he fucks up so much that he's so clearly used to it that he doesn't even know like when he fucked up. He just knows that he is one.
Yeah.
And so like he's surprised by stuff and he's still like taken aback, but also there's just this great resigned quality that Josh gets to play where he understands that he's a piece of shit.
Yeah, it's great.
He
right.
kind of
like when he borrows the $1,800 right at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you know, which is great. Yeah, there's a part the landlord comes and is like, "Hey, you're 2 months behind on your rent. If you don't pay me now, I'm gonna start the eviction process." And Setsuko just gives him the money.
Yeah, but
because
Setsuko's
at that point
sister,
she's still infatuated with him too.
Setsuko's sister obviously is a little more clear-headed and realizes that Josh is a deadbeat.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, and it's like, don't give him the fucking money that we just had. But Josh does this reserved thing, which I just thought was really funny, where he's just like, I'd really appreciate it if I could have the $1,800 right now. And he gives him the $1,800 and he just pays off the landlord.
Well,
he's just here with like these two, the mother of his now ex-girlfriend and her sister, his ex-student at the English class, and he's just letting them tag along. And you're right, he kind of like half finds it funny in his own weird way, because just based on all the ways that he shrugs off these situations and kind of treats them a little lighter than you would normally.
Josh's character is maybe a little bit, I don't know if I, like, there's more evidentiary kind of scenes of his life as opposed to Setsuko, who like you're drawing more from like some sparse dialogue and her own behavior, but she's mostly so, like, depressed and then manically kind of, like, having these outbursts. Whereas with Josh, I don't know, you meet other parts of his life. You see how other people act. His character is, like, revealed in fits and starts throughout the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
And it begins to make more sense, like, who he is, why this situation would arise. And it also makes sense why Setsuko would fall for him, because he's clearly this guy, and it works so well with like who Josh is just as like a physical presence and an actor. Like, he's this guy that's definitely like smart and probably coasted on charm and his height and his looks and stuff for a while, and like used that to be very easy with just like being kind of shitty.
Yep.
And he's now like he is in real life in like 40 or whatever, and he's like, all his chickens are coming home to roost, and he's just like, his life is actually a shambles.
Yeah, and one of the
and
things
he knows it.
One of the things I like about that
is he has to go to Japan to like not be that guy for a little bit.
Right, and one of the things I like about this is that we've talked before about Josh can be he is very charming, and that's rarely utilized well in right. films. And this is, I mean, kind of in a the first time I'd say similar to The Virgin Suicides.
Yeah.
They take this film takes advantage of that, where it uses his charm and charisma to have him be able to sort of skate through life, where he's like, he doesn't try very hard and he fucks things up. And like The Virgin Suicides, like, you see that his life is gonna, like, he's peaking in high school, but people will kind of like go along with him or like give him like things that he wants. He
just kept want to please him for
exactly
some reason, still
right, because there is this likable charm to him. And once again, I'm just like, this, why don't more movies do this? Like, you see how well cast he is here.
Yep.
And also there's scenes I like where they just go out for like stop at a diner and like get burgers, or like there's multiple scenes where Josh and like Setsuko and her sister will just like go to a restaurant or like, you know, like sit in like a coffee shop or something like that. Mm-hmm. And where you'll learn a little bit more about him, and just you get to like the time spent with him there feels so different to, like, you see how he's completely different than how you initially saw him in that the classroom scene.
Yeah, it's like he it's like he totally like he code switches, he personality
it's just,
switches.
It's the most like
he
acting
the States.
Mixed with like a compelling character that I've seen in a minute.
It's also in such stark contrast to the last movie we watched, The Ottoman Lieutenant, where he plays such a flat, one-dimensional, like just bland, nice character.
Yeah, just a guy who's kind of like frustrated and mad.
Yeah, a guy who never changes the entire movie and just goes, you know, this hospital is for everybody.
Like, in O Lucy, you get this guy, which means that you get his deadbeat kind of nature, his mooching, spongy kind of like he just drains from people to like maintain his life. But, you know, you get him defending the two women when he's in the restaurant and the waiter's kind of making fun of them.
And that she can't understand what they're saying when they order something off the menu.
Right.
And like, he's like, hey, you know what they're saying. You know what they're ordering.
He's singing A Thousand Miles, and it's kind of cute.
He sings Vanessa Carlton.
Guys, you're skipping ahead to my favorite part.
Okay,
oh, sorry.
Okay.
Pat really wanted to talk about Vanessa Carlton.
So what happens is, so they're at Josh's apartment.
Yes.
And then basically they find a postcard from Mika from this motel in San Diego.
Yes.
So they're like, whoa, she's in San Diego. Let's go there. And so they rent a car. Obviously, Josh does not rent a car, but only he could drive.
Mm-hmm.
So
because they don't know how to, because they live in Tokyo.
Yep. So he drives, and they drive from L.A. to San Diego, and then we have one of my favorite moments in all of Josh Hartnett's career on the radio, diegetically, the hit song. Making my way downtown, walking fast, faces past, and I'm homebound.
All right, cut it.
And I miss you. I need you. And now I wonder if I could fall into the sky. Do you think time would pass me by? And you know I'd walk 1,000 miles if I could just see you tonight.
Okay, and so that song, the reason we felt it was
so
necessary to sing that song, and for
did we
some
sing
of,
enough for you to know it, maybe a little bit more.
and for our younger listeners, if you're not familiar with that song, it was a big hit in the year 2000.
If you was a zygote,
2000. In the year 2001, from the singer-songwriter Vanessa Carlton,
Zygo Killer.
It was a top 10 single in 2001. It originally appeared in the film Legally Blonde. So guys, there's a bit of your history from 17 years ago. But that song comes on as they are driving, and you have Josh just kind of quietly singing along to it.
In bad falsetto. It's so funny.
It's great.
It's really adorable.
I was losing my mind. And then the song rises up and becomes non-diegetic and like plays louder over the soundtrack, and I was like, this is great. This is just a good use of music. It's a good character moment for this guy.
Get Josh singing more in movies.
Well, he sang in The Ottoman Lieutenant.
Right, this is
so
his second instance
two in a row
singing in a film, and it's twice in a row.
Maybe this is how he's choosing projects
Tic-tac,
now.
Kick-tack,
where's my toe? Contiguous songing.
You know, guys.
Contiguous songing.
Wait, Jake, you've watched Six Below already, right?
Does he sing in Six Below?
Is there... Because if he's alone on the mountain just screaming out, maybe like screaming infidelities.
And I'm 6 feet below.
It'd be funny. He's like yelling for his life. He sees a helicopter overhead and he's like, way! Like he just starts singing as he's yelling. he might hum to himself. But
what was that you just did?
Way!
No, don't do it again.
Jake, you're fired.
Oh, drink the grain alcohol.
Drink your Everclear.
Yeah, you're going blind at this point,
feeling?
I hope. Yeah.
Father of mine, kick Jake off this podcast. So, anyway, yeah, more singing from Josh. That's what we would like in future films. Josh, if you're listening, sing more. We don't care if your voice is good or not. We just think it's fun when you sing.
Do it.
But so, then basically, they get to this motel, and it's at night now, and they go to the front desk, and they're like, and there's like just like this shitty dude working there. It's a cheap motel. And they're like, hey, did this woman, Mika, check in here? And he's like, I can't tell you that. And they're like, look.
I can't give out no information.
Just like that guy's voice. And he's like, this is her mother who's traveled from Japan. Here's her passport to prove it. Here's a postcard from Mika. Just tell us if she's staying here. And the guy's like, yeah, she is. But he will not tell them what room she's in. So they just check into the motel. Importantly, in two separate rooms.
Yes.
They are not going to share a room with this liar, John.
No. Yeah. And it makes sense. And it's a smart thing to do.
And then Setsuko has... Our Lucy. She's pretty much mostly going by Lucy.
Yeah.
She has a wild night.
Oh, yeah.
She smokes the ganj.
She
tries some weed for the first time.
Oh, man. She's a big old Chiba hawk. She's freaking getting zooted, smoking fat doinks, slounting fat doinks.
She snakes down that smoky jane.
You're skipping ahead. Because before that, she walks to just like a convenience store and buys a postcard and writes it to Tom.
Oh,
Her classmate, and then while walking back, this tattooed man smoking a cigarette outside a tattoo parlor says, like, what's up to her? And then she looks back and she goes, what's up? Because she learned the word
what's up from Josh.
What?
How does she do it?
I am not going to do...
Damn it.
No, Matt, that's what you would do.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
What's up?
Well, now I can't because you told me to.
And that's a 2000s what's up.
For our younger listeners,
before Dilly Dilly, there was a little something called Wada.
Look, it was stupid, and we all loved it. It was
really, really cool in the late 90s. And younger listeners, you should bring it back. All your classmates in a high school will think you're awesome.
Yeah, you're definitely gonna be carried out on the shoulders of your classmates if you do it. Because it rules.
It's cool. People won't jump out of their seat and be
dilly,
startled.
Dilly.
Come on. Of course, it was a Budweiser commercial from 1999. Mm. It was actually a commercial campaign that aired from 99 to 2002.
And this was
three straight years just getting hammered into just saying thinking it was part of the culture.
And famously parodied in the film Scary Movie.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And
that's how I remember it.
Some of you were zygotes at this moment, but there were also three frogs. And they would go, Budweiser. Wow.
That's true.
And those were the days.
Ad campaign.
If only zygotes could have memories.
It's funny how what I consider the golden years do align with when I was a child. And how that's true of everyone ever.
Pretty funny that. Yeah. It's
Jake, good reference.
Hell yeah.
R.
And this also, drink, does link in with the, town and country Cinematic universe.
Don't shoehorn this in.
Because look, Setsuko wants to have sex with Josh.
Yes.
Oh, it's true.
She
That's the criteria.
Really does. And you know what? She does.
She does.
Oh,
in
she does.
The most surprising scene of the film.
So she's three doinks in.
From the edge?
She's three doinks, doinks from the edge. And she's smoking. Fucking Josh.
So she's smoking. She's drinking. Shit. And she is learning to drive.
Yeah, and they're having a good time.
In a parking lot.
They're
an empty parking lot.
High as a couple of kites.
I was nervous this whole time because they're high and she's behind the wheel of a car. Yeah. And she's never driven before. I'm like, oh, God. I've seen enough movies to know that this is going to go badly, and there's going to be a crash or something like that.
The movie's already had somebody commit suicide in it, so it's like it's not afraid
exactly.
to go into dark
and,
territory.
And there's not a car crash, but more of a like Dave Matthews kind of crash, where people crash into each other.
This is good. I'm glad and you're embracing the Dave Matthews references now, Pat.
Look, like, I'm just playing for you guys, and I know what will make you happy.
And she and he comes in into
your mouth. Yeah, and
that's what the song Crash is about, guys.
Come in your mouth.
You know what? Yeah, that song is incredibly vulgar, and they used to play it as the last song of the night at every middle school to high school homecoming dance.
You wouldn't play Pony, awkwardly. But you'd play Crash. Same thing. Even worse, maybe.
I didn't know that because I never attended
dancing.
A homecoming dance.
But also, she says, and I come into you.
But you don't ever pay attention to the lyrics, and you're like, oh, romantic song, time to slow dance, and you go home, and it's fine. But then many years later,
you lay awake at night as you're supposed to be falling asleep, and you're like, wait a second,
what's this song about? And I come into
Mr. Matthews,
and then really look at the lyrics, David Matthews. You look at the lyrics, and it's about a man in a tree
spying on a woman undressing.
Yeah,
and he comes into her somehow.
Or it's in his fantasies. It's creepy.
Well, you know what I think is not coincidental?
What?
Crash, the song, came out in 1996 by David Matthews. Uh-huh. Same year as the film Crash by David Cronenberg.
Whoa. Ooh.
And I bet you...
I've never seen them in the same room together either.
Exactly.
So who knows?
Or is the song just about the movie? To our younger listeners, if you haven't seen the David Cronenberg film Crash, just see it. It's not the bad Oscar-winning film about racism. It's a different one. Don't look up what it is. Just watch it.
In fact, if you want a full Crash trilogy, you should listen to the song Crash by Dave Matthews, watch the film Crash by David Cronenberg, and then play Crash Bandicoot. Maybe Warped.
And you might think those things aren't related. But just do them all in a row, and you'll see where the connecting lines are.
Yeah.
It actually makes a narrative.
Whoa!
And that's what you'll be saying when you realize the
connections.
When
you come into this. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a good episode.
So,
crashes
she's blowing
into...
Josh.
No.
Oh.
You're missing what happens.
Yeah, there's a big buildup.
She looks at... She sees that he has a tattoo on his forearm. It's a Japanese character... Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
some kanji or whatever.
I am not an expert on these things, but that's what it looks like. And she's looking at it, and then she keeps looking at it. She's holding his arm, and then she starts like puts her face to it, mm-hmm. and he's like, "Whoa, what are you doing?" Mm-hmm. And then she keeps like moving downward toward his lap, and he is very startled.
Yep,
but
and uncomfortable.
Yeah, he does like. He does not want it at first.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, because he is not thinking of her sexually at all.
Right.
Yeah. And then she does start sucking his dick, and he does eventually like it.
Yeah.
And then...
Well, I think in his own fucked up way, it's because I think she talks to him about this a little bit, too, in that she's like, do I remind you of Mika, right?
And she washes her hair with the soap that Mika used so that her hair will smell like Mika.
That
and
is
so
true.
In his own fucked up way, I think he's like, these weird thoughts of Mika are floating around in his head, too. And then anyways, it escalates into a full-on sex scene, and it is...
Very awkward and weird.
Very, very awkward and weird.
And in a cramped little car.
And in a tiny car. And they're both so high... Because they smoked so much weed and tried to learn how to drive a car.
But basically, like, after... So she's blowing him. And then she, like, gets off. But then he just kind of grabs her and turns her around. And they have a... Just a very awkward...
Yeah.
Like, sex scene in the front seat of the car. Also,
just in the middle of a parking lot.
Logistically, a nightmare.
And if you've been trying to keep track of Josh's butt appearing in films, this has the most prominent display.
It's so close to the lens.
This is some extended booty.
It's like filling up, in some shots, filling up much of the frame.
Yeah.
Just this.
And he's a tall guy. That car is small.
6'3". Yeah, it is like, it's just a four-door sedan.
Yeah. Can I say something, though, just to get you guys pumped for Miracle on the Mountain?
Yes.
Josh Booty alert. But that's all I'll say.
But, oh, wow. But
very different context. He has hypothermia.
Does he have to cut his butt off?
Does he eat his butt? Dude, you have to eat your butt. His butt to survive. And it's a miracle. It's the filled with such delicious nutrients and fats to keep you going.
And I would eat my entire butt
if that means I could survive this in the snow.
Cause you know I'd eat 1,000 bites of my B-U-T-T
cheeks
tonight.
I'd eat 1,000 bites of my butt cheeks tonight.
Why do people listen to this podcast?
Cause that's so stupid
and
funny.
That's so good.
Oh, I would eat 1,000 bites
of my butt cheeks
tonight.
Look, this podcast provides what none others do. It provides intelligent film criticism and commentary, and it provides songs about Josh Hartnett eating his own butt.
And you know I'd eat 1,000 miles of my own butt meat
tonight. Okay. As soon as that song played in the movie, I was like, I guarantee you, we are going to sing it on this podcast.
Have to. Oh, it's so good.
But so they have this awkward sex scene and then kind of pull their clothes back into position.
And now everything is different.
Go back and to the motel, and he's like, hey, maybe don't tell people about this.
Yeah, especially your sister, aka Mika's mom.
Or no, he's like, don't tell Mika.
Oh, yeah, and don't tell Mika, obviously.
Because he's still carrying a torch a bit. We don't really know, like, where or why Mika left. But, yeah, so then there's just, like, this awkward parting where they kind of, like, back up and do each other into the separate hotel room.
Wait. No, but she doesn't go to her hotel room yet. Mm-hmm. She goes back to that tattoo parlor where the tatted up guy was smoking outside.
This is key.
And gets, this is very key, and gets a matching tattoo
of the love symbol.
Yes, on her forearm. Mm-hmm. And then she goes to his room and wakes him up to show it to him. And he was like, and she wants to come inside. He's like, no.
Yeah. If he already regretted his decision before, and now he's doubly regretting it. Because
he's realizing how crazily infatuated she is with him. It's a sad movie.
She's
a very sad character.
Right, and the scenes that are also funny, like, this movie has funny scenes and it has sad scenes, but all of the funny scenes are also kind of sad.
Yeah, so it's all people making mistakes throughout reasons that are very desperate and rooted in depression and desperation.
It's cringe humor in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and then she goes back to her motel room, and her sister's all mad, like, where were you? I went and knocked on John's door, and he wasn't there either. And she was like, oh, we went to get cigarettes.
Right.
And then she just kind of lays down there and then sleeps late the following day. And her sister actually goes out for breakfast with John.
Mm-hmm. They have a conversation.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? You know what this is like? You know what? This is like a movie version of
what?
The Simpsons episode "I
oh
Love
my
Lisa."
God, dude,
look, how come it's never like a Family Guy episode?
Because
Pat?
Family Guy is bad, and The Simpsons is the greatest television show of all time.
Guy.
Family Guy has jokes. No one ever talks about the Family Guy episode
because
their stories are garbage and are they're just excuses to string jokes along. But,
that's true. But those jokes sure are good. Go ahead.
Sure. but the Simpsons episode "I Love Lisa," where Lisa feels bad for Ralph Wiggum on Valentine's Day because he's not getting any valentines, and gives him the I choose you okay, valentine, and then, and just as a nice gesture, and then he falls in love with her,
yeah,
and like follows her around and gives her all these gifts and is like obsessed with her and infatuated because of this one nice gesture.
Yeah,
this is basically that.
When Ralph walks home with Lisa and he's trying to make conversation, he's just like, "So, do you like stuff?" It's so funny. See? Lisa and goes, "Ugh." I mean, and everyone—it's everyone's nightmare to be the Ralph arc, you know, like sort of like analog in those situations too.
Well,
it's
everybody's
nightmare to be the Lisa analog, which is like you realize that you have to, you're put into a strange position that you don't want to be in, where you have to be a bad guy.
You're
suddenly
you were trying to be nice, just being a good person,
right? And now you realize you have to hurt somebody's feelings because you did a good thing
because
earlier.
You didn't want to initially.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And then, like Bart says, if you go frame by frame, you can pinpoint the exact moment where his heart rips in half.
Yeah. That's a good one. Bart loves it.
But that's basically what this movie is. He is just a nice, friendly person who just does, you know, behaves to her like he does to his other students.
Right.
And then she just takes that, like to heart and then becomes infatuated with
him. But also, there's an edge to Josh.
Caught in his heart net. Come on.
Oh, I mean, it's not. I mean, it's clearly not the same thing. Like, Josh is not Lisa, and Josh is
way less sympathetic.
No. I'm not.
You find out later,
right? And Lisa is not Ralph. But it just like on paper, it's like a similar story.
But I'm not saying that. I'm just saying when you're like, yeah, like Josh is a nice guy. I mean, he is on some level, but you know, kind of like that sex scene, and then like what you learn later. He's a philanderer, like he...
Oh, he's not a nice guy.
He's a faker. He's like has a kid with this other woman, and it's kind of hinted that they're driving around in the parking lot of his former employer, the college in that region.
Yeah,
in San Diego.
He says he used to teach there.
So he was a professor of some sort who's now been like lowered to, you know, doing these like freelance English lessons.
What do you
want to
bet he
slums?
Slept with a student, and that's what cost?
Well, that's
job.
What I'm saying is, yeah. I think that isn't just like a bet. Don't they kind of obliquely reference that?
Do they?
Because his wife, with
his
whom
wife
he's estranged
seems,
and has kicked him out of the house, seems to consider him a pretty big piece of shit too.
Like she's
they don't
like,
ever specify
he's like
why,
a student
but,
of mine. Did a student of mine came here? She's like Japanese girl, and yeah, and it's like there's somewhere in that exchange, there's some sort of like hint. That she's not surprised that yet another student has approached her.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah, no, yeah,
that is
right.
The initial cause of his probable firing and divorce.
Yeah, he's too handsome and too
because what happened is it seems like Mika met his daughter, Samantha.
Which is why Mika left.
Right.
Right, and so he goes to his... I think it's a thing where, like, they haven't gotten divorced, but they are clearly not together.
Yeah.
So he goes to his wife's house and talks to Samantha and is like, hey, is Mika here? And his wife is just like, get out of here.
Well, Samantha's
the daughter.
The daughter, yeah.
Right, but then he's talking to Samantha at the door, but then the wife comes in behind her.
Right.
And she's like, get out of here. And
why don't you do your, you know, child support payments, and then I'll talk to you at all.
Right,
and he just leaves.
So Setsuko had slept in late because she had a long night, and then just runs into Mika.
Yeah, just on the street.
Yeah, who was there and is like, oh yeah, John sucks.
Yeah,
I
found out he had a wife and kid. He didn't tell that to me when we were together.
I got out of there, and then they just go for a walk together.
Yep,
and
on the seaside,
like
so nice
on a cliff.
So one pretty.
Yeah.
Very
and,
beautiful view.
And then they have this talk, and then the big part is when Mika reveals that she and John got matching tattoos, and she has that same forearm tattoo.
Yeah.
And that's when Setsuko just starts laughing
and
realizing like how pathetic she is. And it's like this is like her low point.
Yep.
Like she was just played like
her point
niece
is coming
was.
Soon.
yeah, it's actually coming real
true.
Soon.
True. But at this point that is when it like it really hits her of just this all sucks. This was all stupid.
Yeah,
I am
I'm an
such
idiot.
A loser.
I shouldn't have done this. This is like a total just folly and of the trip.
She tells Mika that, and also before that, Mika had been like, hey, we should go on an adventure together. Like, Auntie, let's go to, like, Mexico. And she,
well, in a weird way, what's funny is that she, her actions mirror what her sister did to her when they were younger, which is that her older sister took away her boyfriend, and she inadvertently does it to her own fake surrogate phantom daughter that she thought she had. She ends up taking her boyfriend and then fucking with her head. And so it's this, like, gross, just she repeated the mistake of the person she hated the most in her own past. And
so
she's like,
holy shit.
That dawns
on her, like, also after she, like, very ill-advisedly confesses to having slept with John.
And then shows Mika that, look, I got the same tattoo
a day ago for the same reasons you probably did.
Mika does not find it as funny.
No. Also, it is kind of Mika. It was also sort of slightly seeded the idea that she is kind of manic and mentally unstable.
Yes.
This is then borne out. True. It's really light. Like, I didn't quite expect this from her in this scene, but, like, the notion that she's just kind of, like, searching for something and it is, like, in this weird place and really erratic in her behavior. Her mother had said a bunch of that already.
Right. That's true.
But they confess. And they get in a physical fight with each other.
Mika immediately starts freaking out because she's
and
like...
And just attacks her.
Yeah, just starts attacking Setsuko. And then when she's sort of worn out some of her energy with the initial, like, throwing punches at her, just in a fit of pure despair and rage, throws herself off the cliff.
She just jumps off the cliff.
She jumps off the cliff.
And tries to kill herself.
And, I mean, it looks like she's dead. We see...
I am still confused as to how she survived.
Well, she barely survives. She's like in a full body cast in the next scene.
Also, she's
face
on the rocks.
Down in some water.
She's in the water.
That is true.
But I mean, like...
how do you get
down
there
that fast?
Yeah, well, I mean, like, I thought she was dead because you see this, like, shot from Setsuka's perspective looking down, and she's just face down floating in the water.
It's a literal dead man's float.
And then it cuts to the hospital where she... Yeah, basically in a body cast. She looks... bad.
She looks terrible.
And she screams that both John and Setsuko are there, and she's like, get the fuck out.
She hates her mom and her aunt.
And
she's like, you
and
both.
John.
And John. And, I hate all of you.
But at least she'll talk to her mom. And then, Then Setsuko just sort of
resignedly returns back to Japan.
Yeah.
Because she's like, wow, I fucked with my entire family, my remaining family.
I made
some of the worst decisions in my entire life thinking that I was living this renewed... I had this new joie de vivre.
Yeah, I was following my bliss and I was becoming new. And this is what I like, is this twist on the format of like, no, what if you, you know... What if you act impulsively finally and you're like, oh, my boring, stale life. If I just break this routine, everything will... I'll open these new doors, that'll be good. But instead, she's just kind of like enacting the toxic, you know, notions and
well,
and,
it's the funny thing. It's like, you know, people are fed so much of this Tony Robbins-esque release your true potential and self-actualize and, and be the person you need to be who you think you are. But
it's like the Simpsons episode, Bart's Inner Child.
It's like the Family Guy episode when Chris... shit, I don't have...
Yeah, it does something. He's an artist.
When Meg is...
says, remember this time?
and then it's and a cultural it's, reference to like a 1937 musical theater star. Yeah. What were you gonna
say? Sorry, you said this Tony Robbins style, like.
Oh, yeah. Like,
oh, it's so people need these sorts of
the
messages.
Power of now.
So, like, the power of now and take advantage and the secret type stuff, where it's if you put that energy out there, it returns back to you.
And she has made her life worse by doing
that. The type of people that need that are repressed people, usually, or people that have suffered from either some kind of like. Yeah, anhedonia in their life where they're bored and listless and depressed and feel like life has washed over them and time has slipped by. That type of... There are so few
they
movies
wish they
that
could
show
get
you.
The power to want to kill themselves. Like, that's a level of emotional intensity that, like, these type of people we're talking about, like, at this point would wish to have. It's, like, just nothing.
But there's also so few movies that show that that impulse could, as easy as it could result in some positive outcome, also just show that maybe the type of person who has had so many years behind them of a distasteful experience that what is still remaining in them to release is just problematic behavior, or maybe not going
or
to
like self
be
like
a
injurious, like, yeah, like self-damaging,
yeah,
like you're just going to extend more of this aspect that's negative of yourself just out into the world,
and it's
going to
just, instead of being helpful,
you have not
just
cured
be,
yourself,
yeah,
you have just been more active with the problems that you have,
yeah, you've amplified the hate and resentment that is built in your soul,
yeah,
for the years that you've sat
with pain for other people around you, and that's about it.
That's kind of right. What Setsuko learns, and right, so she returns to Japan now in a completely distraught emotional
despair
state.
It's also pretty important, I just want to note that,
yeah,
because while she did become a bit more open and she took,
yeah,
more risks and put herself out there more, she still didn't actually form like any genuine human connections with anybody.
Right, no, she failed on the one front that was the nominal purpose of the whole thing.
Oh, Kent, we should also talk about Josh's last scene, because I think his character ends on a great note.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
yeah, yeah,
where
it's a good scene.
They argue for a while, and he's trying to, he's also experiencing the same thing Setsuko's experiencing too, which is just, I think, having this realization that
he's
also just only acted as a explosive bomb that's destroyed this family in his own way. It's not lost on him that he's the kind of the catalyst for it.
Mm-hmm.
He's
right,
not dumb enough to not be aware of that.
He's kind of seeing like the pattern finally,
yeah,
of his own behavioral tics and yeah,
but he runs away like he
has been
doing, so
he gets
whether or not
his
he actually
Volvo,
really
Volvo
learns
station
anything
wagon,
yeah, and tries to drive away.
There's this weird thing where like some like doddering mentally ill patient in like a hospital gown, like kind
of
like,
oh yes, yeah,
but
out of the
and that's
he's
kind of like a mirror
of
when they were he was teaching Setsuko to drive in the parking lot before,
and there's,
yeah,
a deer,
and there's a deer all of a sudden, and they like slammed the brakes, so there's,
yeah,
there's two things of people of them slamming the brakes in a car because something is like right ahead of them in
and there's some
lots
sort of deer and headlights metaphor that I'm not quite sure.
Or maybe,
yeah,
it's the difference between a...
Also, can I just say about the deer?
Yeah.
They got a real deer to put in that parking lot.
Yeah, you hear that? The ring, too?
No, I was going to say...
the ring, too?
I was going to say, hey, three billboards, why couldn't you afford a real deer in a rural area?
Yeah, instead of,
yeah,
that
how expensive
shit
could it be to render a CGI deer that looks stupid,
yeah,
versus...
Because look,
oh,
Lucy had a smaller budget, and they had a real deer.
Yeah. Hey,
that's
McDonough?
All I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah, with the program.
What, you needed the deer to act more than the way that was controllable? So you...
Just get the deer trainer from Olusi. Clearly a good deer trainer. Anyway, but...
Great
but yeah, there...
But he sees this person, and yeah, they... There's a very intentional sort of slightly longer than the scenes had before cut and linger to his face.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're supposed to... I gather you're supposed to, like, think that he... is himself at least having some kind of dreadful epiphany about his behavior.
About the cyclical,
yeah.
shitty behavior.
So he gets something like that
of
right before, and that's,
yeah,
it. And
this was
out.
What it really started occurring to me, that like he's basically in his whole other movie. And
yeah.
And has this, this whole other storyline that like is going to continue on,
yeah,
like past that. And just like their two stories just kind of collided. Like here, and that's what I just like so much about his character, that there is like this whole life that like it was going on before Setsuko met him and will continue, you know,
long
like
after.
Long
that's what's
after.
Cool. It's got the feeling of a short story that's really well drawn, where there's kind of these ellipses before and after each character's introduction and exit from the narrative, you know, where you're like, I fully believe that these are people that like have behaviors that will continue to like have repercussions.
Yeah.
That they brought their shit with them into the place where we're dropped into the story, and they are going to just continue on doing something that like I can kind of vividly imagine after the story's over. And you know, you don't get that a ton.
Yeah.
Certain Women, you know that movie?
The Kelly Reichardt movie?
I think so.
I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it.
I know the one you're talking about.
It's like not... There's... It's like broken into like three parts, and not all of them are great, especially...
The one with Michelle Williams and Kristen Stewart, right?
Yeah. Michelle Williams' story is kind of the weakest, but Kristen Stewart's one, there's this... I think it's a Native American actress of some sort She gets this. She has this sort of. She's gay, and she has this kind of infatuation with Kristen Stewart.
Oh, I've heard about
this. Who
plays
an English teacher?
Oh,
And that might be just for that part of the film alone. That might be one of that's worth the price of entry because like it's just such a like amazing story told in a really short amount of time.
I should see this.
Yeah, it's really good. That's
I like Kelly Reichardt.
I
Old Joy is a good movie. And Wendy and Lucy, those are the only ones I've
seen.
I have not seen
either. Did she do Meek's Cutoff as well?
Oh, I saw Meek's Cutoff.
I haven't seen that. I haven't seen any of her movies. That is a big gap in my viewing. I have seen Transformers The Last Night, but I have not seen a single Kelly Reichardt film.
Have you seen Transformers The Last Night, but you haven't seen Old Joy?
Oh my gosh.
Shocking, right?
Well, all I'm trying to say is, well, I think Certain Women's is based on a short story, like an actual...
By the writer of Transformers The Last Night.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Can you imagine if the writer was the same as Certain Women?
Transformers
so
pays
funny.
The bills. Yo, if it don't make dollars, it don't make sense, dog. I'm doing some Transformers shit.
Honestly, you never know. Like, Alex Ross Perry co-wrote Christopher Robin.
Yeah, and Charlie Kaufman wrote freaking
Kung Fu Panda 2.
So,
well, he came in to do punch-ups on that, but Charlie Kaufman did write the screenplay for this big new sci-fi action movie starring Tom Holland and Daisy Ridley that Doug Liman is directing that's coming out next year.
Mm.
It is like a blockbuster movie script written by Charlie Kaufman.
Wonderful.
Still not as funny as Kung Fu Panda 2 punch-ups, though. Especially when you think of the word punch-ups and you think of Kung Fu.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Man.
I think Noah Baumbach wrote Madagascar 2.
Yes, yeah, I'm pretty sure you're right.
I think William,
just another
I
funny
think William
example.
Golding
actually, Transformers The Last Night.
Actually a Shark Tale or whatever.
No. Everyone wrote Shark Tale.
Shark Tale, right.
Shark Tale, that was one where
everyone wrote Shark Tale.
Yeah.
It was a funny one.
It was a big Bukkake script. Everyone just came in and... spilled a little ink
what's
on that
it called?
Page.
The something, the exquisite corpse. Is that
yes.
what you
yeah.
do
yeah,
in
yeah,
the story?
Yeah, you just draw your like.
But they did it with the shark's tail.
No, shark. So
starring Will Smith and Martin Scorsese.
Okay, guys,
ludicrous. And
would you like
Dame
me to
Judy
read
Dance.
You?
Okay.
Yes. Would you like me to read you the writing credits for Shark Tale?
Please.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So the regular screenplay credits are for Michael J. Wilson and Rob Letterman, and then for. Additional dialogue.
Yeah.
Shall I tell you who's credited?
Let's go. Of course.
Okay, so we've got Scott Aukerman, Alec Berg, as in co-creator of Silicon Valley, Sean Bishop, BJ Porter, Jeff Schaefer, Lena Williams, David P. Smith, and David Soren.
Too many.
These people are all, literally, if you click the writer... part of Shark Tale, they are all listed there.
Damn, what did they improv, like comedy Bang Bang, a whole script about fucking sharks?
And you know what's
yes,
funny?
Yes, as in, that is a thing where they had a screenplay, and
ugh.
Then, and I, like there's an episode of Are You Talking to R.E.M. or E.B. where Scott Aukerman talks about working on that movie,
yeah.
where it was like a long-term gig. They had them going into the office like every day.
For 3 years.
To just write material for this movie. It sounds
the sharks,
so
they gotta
weird.
Keep saying stuff.
And they also thought that it was gonna be a big hit and it'd be like a Shrek and be like a franchise.
Be a Shrek.
And it wasn't.
This better be a Shrek or I'm out of here.
Just the producers are watching the first screening of the movie and just like, be a Shrek! Just screaming at it.
But
I mean,
expecting
like,
Shrek.
I mean, it is clearly the most like post-Shrek movie. Guys, never forget, we're the Shrek generation.
A Shrek tail.
A Shrek tail?
Make it a Shrek. Put All Star in it.
Make it a Shrek.
Guys, you know what I think about sometimes?
What?
Shrek?
Shrek and Puppers?
Blue Flower, Red Thorns?
Blue Flower, Red Thorns.
Oh my god. Well, okay, for instance, did you see the news yesterday that apparently Disney is currently working on plans to reboot Pirates of the Caribbean?
Oh, good. They needed it.
Pirates booty.
Oh yeah, because it was. It's been like a year since the last one, but now they're like, okay.
How do we rebooty the trilogy?
Well, the reason because like
there's
like,
more than three, right?
There's five. There's five. But God. No. But no one cares about them after the first three.
Wait, can I tell you that I went to with my friend Josie. I went to go see The Incredibles 2, and there was a trailer for Transylvania
Hotel Transylvania.
Right,
the third one.
The third one, but it's like
on the cruise ship,
Hotel Transylvania, like
summer vacation.
And we were watching the. It just made me laugh so much because like we were watching the trailer and like they're on a cruise ship and Van Helsing's daughter's there and whatever, and then Josie was like laughing at it, and then it said like Hotel Transylvania 3, and she's like, 3? Like she had no idea there was even one of those things.
Oh, and by the way, they are all directed by Genndy Tartakovsky, creator of Dexter's Lab.
I know, it actually makes me want to watch them.
Actually, I haven't seen any of them, but recently Blank Check did an episode just about the three movies, and listening to that made me actually sort of I was like, oh, because the way that they explained it, it was like the gags don't translate to trailers because they're so sort of like classical animation comedy, like timing based that Tartakovsky is good at, and I was like, damn it, sort of want to watch them now.
No, as soon as I heard he was, because I remember at some point I did the same thing where you're like, oh, good, Dexter's Lab, Powerpuff Girls. What is he up to?
What's he doing?
Powerpuff Girls, I'm Samara Chuck, what's up to? and then you Wikipedia him, and you're like, oh, Hotel Transylvania. Hotel Transylvania 1-3. Some kind of movie.
Soccer Bill 1. Maybe I'll see.
So anyways, that's my story.
What were we talking about before this? Charlie Kaufman, Kung Fu Panda?
Kung Fu Panda and script rewrites.
Transformers last night?
Of course we were talking about it.
Yeah, of course.
Maybe a Simpsons episode.
Everything. The theory of everything.
We're two hours into this episode.
We finished Josh's last scene. Let's just talk about Setsuko going home. Let's wrap it up.
She goes home, and once again, it's gray and bleak and overcast in Japan. Mm-hmm. And she arrives back at work. She gives a gift to her boss, and then he tells her she's being transferred.
You're fired. Right. Which is, again, this weird, like, a different sense of, like, a company notion that she's not fired, she's not laid off, she's just transferred. They wouldn't do her the dishonor because she's, I guess, been there long enough to lay her off.
But she's just, like, it's sort of a disposable thing where it's, like, she's a piece just being moved somewhere else.
Yeah, yeah. And she's like, I get it. I'll just resign. You win. As if she had been playing this mind game with her boss, which we all have.
Yeah.
For years.
I'm my own boss. What are you talking about?
You're the craziest.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
You're like James McAvoy in Split. Yeah. You got like 20 different personalities fighting each other.
But right now I'm the Beast.
Yeah.
Well, you're always the Beast when we're doing the podcast.
Yeah.
Exactly. You guys can't see it right now, but my like neck veins are huge.
Yeah.
Hey
guys, Paco's epic beast mode whenever we're doing the podcast.
What you also can't see is that I'm lifting up my half of the table and holding it there for the entire podcast.
Yeah.
It's just like 6 inches up off the ground.
So I want to make a gif of the part in the trailer for
Glass
where he's lifting the car.
Did you see I stole the screenshot? Once again, Matt, if you were on
everything happened on Twitter today.
Everything.
Jake posted it and I retweeted it, and I think that's up to like 50 something likes.
50, you hear that?
So way to go, Jake.
You hear that, you son of a bitch.
Jake didn't even caption it. All he did was post a screenshot, and like people are loving it.
It speaks for itself. A picture is worth 1,000 words.
So I said 1,000 words.
Thanks, guys.
What I was going to say before you guys made fun of me about not being on social media enough, I guess, for you guys. Welcome to the surveillance state. Hope Fark Zuckerberg likes your fucking
Zuckerberg
metadata.
So Setsuko is cleaning out her desk.
Yeah.
Is you extend James McAvoy's neck. Just a couple.
Is this our worst episode?
Just a little bit longer. So Setsuko is cleaning out her desk. She dumps out all the weird candy she'd been saving from that one other employee who
keeps giving out candy that sucks.
Keeps giving out candy and sucks, even though she's a big sweetie who literally gives out sweeties. And as she closes the door behind her and brings her meager belongings through the hallway of fluorescent flickering light, she hears cheering.
Yeah.
As everyone basically celebrates her departure because she was such
a buzzkill.
Buzzkill, toxic,
wet blanket,
boring presence.
Also,
yeah.
I we forgot to mention this. When she just pulls out the candy drawer, like pulls out the drawer from her desk and is just dumping it into the trash can.
Yeah.
She's just trying to get out of there as fast as she can. And then the ping pong ball that Josh gave her in class falls out, and she picks up the ping pong ball, and then she's just like, you know what, I'm just going to leave. She says, I'll come back and get the rest of the stuff. And her boss says, we'll mail it to you.
It's a really, that sequence hit me harder than all the other sequences.
Yeah.
Was just her leaving and then her boss saying, we'll mail it. I don't know why, but like that made me so depressed.
It's just icing on the indignity cake.
Yeah.
Like that's been happening. We would rather you not come back here at all. And then she goes home to her just like trash pit of an apartment.
And just dryly eats like an entire
bottle of sleeping pills.
Bubble sleeping pills.
But then she gets a guest.
Here he comes, guys. Door. You thought we forgot about him, but we didn't.
Ground control to Major what?
Tom.
It's Tom.
Tommy's there.
And he's there.
Knocking on the door, and he's like, what's the deal? Where are you? And then I kind of love it when, even though it's sad, but
she's stepping through the door. And she's lying on the floor in
feeling very strange. And he sprays water in her mouth.
You're skipping ahead because she is just like slumped on the ground by the door, and she reaches up and turns the doorknob, and then just like falls out the door.
Right.
And he pretty much catches her, and then realizes that she's taking a bunch of sleeping pills, and brings her to the bathroom, and then
pours cold water on her.
Well, gets the shower handle, and just sprays water into her mouth to get her to. Does that work to get you to throw up?
I think he's trying to like just give her the medium by which to purge,
right?
Instead of
by
binge.
Like triggering her gag reflex by spraying water down her mouth.
Yeah. And it kind—I guess it works.
I was hoping it would be like a 21 Jump Street thing where he just like shoves his hand in her mouth to try to just like finger blasting her mouth.
He's kind of doing that,
yeah.
And then she pukes up the pills into the tub.
There's another really heartbreaking moment where she's like still kind of obviously fucked up, and she starts like taking off all her clothes.
At first it's funny because her shirt is wet and she's going to change it. So she's like taking off her shirt, and then when he sees her in her bra, he's very flustered and taken aback and turns away.
Right.
And that's kind of funny.
But
then she like starts trying to kiss him and like take her bra off.
And it's just
she tries to sleep with him a little bit like in this like dazed, drugged, depressed state, and he's like very like much trying to be like, no, you, let's stop.
Yeah.
And that might be actually the most grim moment for me too.
Yeah, because again,
and
this
it takes all the preceding shit of the entire film to this moment, and it's so sad. This movie is very sad.
Yeah.
And then, so thankfully, they don't sleep together.
No.
Yeah.
And she...
Tom is a decent person.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Not like Josh, a.k.a. John.
Yeah.
And anyway, she gets clothed.
Mm-hmm.
And do we just cut right to the subway station?
I think so.
You guys would remember better than me.
Yeah, they're in the subway station together, and he tells her that years ago, and also we should mention Tom's wife has died.
Yeah,
after his wife died, he started taking the English class.
Four months prior.
Yeah, but then he tells her in the subway station, and this is a sad movie, that his son committed suicide years ago.
And he blames himself because he said he was a very stern father, and he also kind of was changed a little bit, at least, by John's class into being a more emotionally open kind of extrovert. So Josh did do some good in a way.
He kind of indirectly
saved Lucy's life, or Setsuko's life in a way.
Right.
Which is part of like what's...
Very indirectly. But it is sort of like the ideas that somebody can inspire in somebody else just at the end of the day will have no bearing on the human that was the person that acted as the catalyst. That catalyst then transcends that person very quickly.
Right.
Becomes like an
the chain of causality,
chain.
As
yeah.
we were discussing.
Oh,
all
yes.
At the beginning.
The Merovingian.
Oh, right. The Merovingian would say.
The merengue cookie.
This is where I'll splice in a clip of the Merovingian talking, because that's what our listeners want.
We need to splice in a clip of freaking Ashton Kutcher in The Butterfly Effect.
Jackie!
I've never seen that movie.
Cat Scratch Jackie.
That was a big movie when we were in high school. It was a movie that people thought was, like, profound.
It made me upset. My favorite thing to name myself in, like, online games is Kelso from That 70s Show. Just all one word with no spaces.
That's great, actually.
That's where the movie ends.
It just
kind of
ends
left
there.
With Tom and Lucy sharing tender moment where they hug.
They hug.
And she does the gesture that sort of brought her on this horrible journey where she opened herself up and then hurt everybody, where she hugs someone earnestly and closes her eyes.
And they give you the approaching sound of the train, too.
Yes.
Right.
Which is what you're left with at the beginning when somebody threw themselves off.
Back
and now instead you have people... Two sad, fucked up people hugging each other.
Ugh.
The train.
Lovely film.
Yeah, but there is hope.
Lovely movie.
Well done.
Yes. And I have a heart on for both Josh and this movie.
Oh, gosh. Raging.
Finally.
Did somebody sneak me some Cialis? Because I got a huge heart on right now.
And it won't go away. And I am calling a helpline.
Please call the doctor.
I have a priapism, and it is, I am getting dizzy. With joy, because this film is great.
It's great.
Yes.
Shout out once again, hold on.
Yeah.
Get
her name right.
Shout out to Atsuko Hiranagi, because she, I think, also, with a movie like this, dances a very fine line throughout the entire length of it. Of falling into indie film quirky parody.
Mm-hmm.
And she avoids it, and she does that balancing act like a pro. And this is for a debut feature film.
I'm excited to see what she does next.
Hella strong. Good character acting. All the characters get a lot of depth to them, especially Josh, who is just... We've been in a drought kind of character.
Josh, since he moved into adult roles away from teen roles... He's had a tough time finding really interesting characters, and this is one of the most interesting by far.
Yeah.
And this demonstrates one of his best qualities, too, though, which is, like, you know, he's been in a string of failures, but he takes chances with directors, and he's constantly, I think, surprising people in at least, like,
his choices.
The subject matter of the films, if not their execution. So
yeah, and I mean, this is... I would love to see him do more things like this, and I hope this is a sign of things to come.
Maybe a Josh-a-sance?
Look,
Heartening?
We will it into existence, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So, guys, we are 2 hours and 12 minutes into this episode.
Damn.
I think we should wrap it up.
Oh, all right. We're just too gung-ho because it's good.
So any final thoughts on Oh, Lucy, other than that we have raging heart-ons all around?
No, it's great. Go see it. It's on Hulu for free for $79.99 a month.
It's on Hulu, or you can rent it anywhere else. Buy it on iTunes if it's still cheap there. And so, of course, we want to hear from you guys. If you saw Oh, Lucy, tell us. You can follow us on Twitter at HeartHeartNet. Send us emails, hearthartnet@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram at WeHeartHeartNet. Thank you to Brian Hose for our theme song. Watch the videos that we make, the new one coming out probably, actually, I think same day as this podcast is going to be a good one. All of us are in it and involved. Mm-hmm. It's a fun time. YouTube.com/PatrickHWillems. Follow me on all the social medias at Patrick H. Willems, Jake.
Awesome. You can follow me on Twitter at JRTorpy and on Vero at Up All Night to Oh Lucy and Matt.
And you can follow me at Matthew Torpy on Twitter and Matt.sucks on Instagram.
And coming next week, Six Below, Miracle. Miracle on the Mountain.
Yes. Final stretch, folks.
We hear that Josh would eat 1,000 butts. And I would fall into the sky. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody. We love you.
Bye. people of the multiverse. I'm Rachel Shank.
I'm Scott Thomas.
And I'm Patrick Willems.
And we want to tell you about our brand new podcast, The Infinity Podcast.
What is The Infinity Podcast? We're not sure. It's definitely about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it might tackle what actor should play Cap next, or what is up with Jeremy Renner's Instagram.
Ooh, Anthony Mackie and very little.
It absolutely takes us down the road from Infinity War into infinity with an infinite number of detours along the way.
So it's not your typical Marvel podcast.
And it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
So please subscribe, review, or even just check us out. Destiny, like this podcast, arrives all the same.